sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Harley Carnes. The many months of stories about the collapse of Enron have come to this day. The former CFO of the energy giant, Andrew Fastow, told the court today he inflated the books to make Enron look healthier than it was, and his boss, Jeffrey Skilling, knew all about it. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen.
So far, so good for prosecutors as far as Fastow goes. He told jurors that Enron's top guys knew what he was up to when he was managing those off-the-book partnerships to help Enron hide its losses. And if jurors believe that story, when cross-examination is done, the defendants, especially Skilling, will be in deep trouble.
The collapse of Enron was a multi-billion dollar hit to the economy, and it knocked gaping holes in the retirement plans of many thousands of people. Two San Francisco Chronicle investigative reporters have published a book, Game of Shadows, which contends giant slugger Barry Bonds has taken all kinds of performance enhancers, at least 10 substances, plus a masking drug. They quote court documents and at least 200 sources.
This is Steve Futterman in Peoria, Arizona. The Giants are saying nothing. Barry Bonds says he doesn't plan to even read the book or the article. As for Major League Baseball, spokesman Rich Levin says the league at the moment has no comment.
We haven't had a chance to read it yet, Steve. So it's inappropriate for us to say anything about it until we do so.
Similar allegations have been made against Barry Bonds before, but the current article has more supporting evidence. Bonds has always maintained that he's never knowingly taken performance-enhancing drugs.
2 months ago, Dana Reeve had enough breath left to sing. Now and forever. Today, the widow of Christopher Reeve has died of an aggressive lung cancer. Coincidentally, Dana Reeve discovered she had it just 2 days after ABC anchor Peter Jennings died.
She really was such a wonderful, warm, strong character. And what you saw was what you got. So it's a devastating loss.
Maggie Goldberg worked for Reeve at the Christopher Reeve Foundation. From now on, the White House intelligence briefings will include more members of key committees. Kansas Senator Pat Roberts says it's part of an agreement over the NSA wiretap program.
I am pleased to announce that the committee has accepted the agreement and created a subcommittee to conduct oversight of the terrorist surveillance program.
West Virginia Democrat Jay Rockefeller isn't exactly satisfied.
The committee is, to put it bluntly, basically under the control of the White House.
Making lemonade out of life's lemons. Humorist Art Buchwald refuses dialysis treatment for his failing kidneys. He chooses to live out his life in a very nice hospice. And he says he's having the best time of his life, even though he knows these are his last times. Buchwald is 80. He says he's known around the hospice as the man who wouldn't die. He says some people have taken to sending him get-well cards. Those, he says, are hard to answer. On Wall Street, the Dow gained 22 points to close at more than 10,980. The Nasdaq lost about 17 points on the day. This is CBS News.
This year, you'll drive to 42 baseball practices, 3 doctor's appointments, 4 parent-teacher conferences, 22 sleepovers, 6 birthday parties, 15 trips to the video store, 8 dentist appointments, 31 haircuts, 29 trips to the mall, 2 trips to grandma's, 17 soccer practices, and 1 piano recital. With your schedule, you rely on your car for a lot. So make sure it gets the maintenance it needs at a Napa Auto Care Center. Napa, get the good stuff.
Every day, people save more and more money on Priceline. Save when you find your own hotel. Save even more when we find it for you. Save packaging your hotel with airfare, booking early, or even on last-minute deals. Priceline now has more ways to save on hotels than any leading travel site. Priceline, more ways to save.
A mild weekend in Vermont this weekend may make a difference on your breakfast table in a few months' time. CBS News correspondent Dave Barrett pours out the details.
It could be in the 50s in the daytime and below freezing at night this weekend in Vermont, perfect for kicking off the maple syrup season. Vermont is number one, producing about 40% of the U.S.'s maple syrup. A maple can produce roughly a gallon of it per day. It takes about 40 gallons to make 1 gallon of pancake-drenching syrup. American Indians once boiled the sap to produce crystallized sugar that would not spoil. It turned into one of the first commodities traded with newcomers from Europe. Dave Barrett, CBS News.
A tiny liberal town in Vermont is asking its congressman, Bernie Sanders, to file articles of impeachment against President Bush, his allegedly impeachable offense that experts say, by the way, has absolutely no chance of going anywhere, that he misled America during the run-up to war in Iraq. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Sweet! I've been waiting for lunch all day!
Me too! Natalie, I'll trade my apple for your potato chips.
I don't know, Matthew, my potato chips or your cookie?
Let's see. Billy, what's that?
Rich chocolate Ovaltine!
Rich chocolate Ovaltine!
An apple and my gummy bears for the Ovaltine?
No way!
Potato chips and grape juice for the rich chocolate Ovaltine?
No way!
2 cookies, bubblegum, and my Hershey's chocolate milk?
Double no way!
Aww! More Ovaltine, please!
XM Satellite Radio is the exclusive satellite radio network for Major League Baseball, and now XM radios are available starting at just $50. XM gives you play-by-play for every Major League Baseball team all season long, plus the World Baseball Classic. And XM has America's largest playlist, including commercial-free music, plus news, talk, and other live sports. So why wait? Hurry in to stores like Best Buy, Circuit City, or visit XMRadio.com to get XM today. Follow your favorite team with XM. Listen large. Price after mail-in rebate and may vary by retailer. Required monthly subscription and hardware sold separately. Activation fee applies.
It's 3:06, and this is the launch point of the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm glad you've joined us from the very start. We're live, unscripted, unrehearsed, all the way till 6 o'clock. And we're all the way live, en vivo, en español, on KRXA 540, Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz, and on a good day, King City. We're live on KGOE 1480, Eureka, Arcata, Humboldt County, and on a good day, Ferndale checks us out. On a really good day, you can hear us in Crescent City, too. And we've got a great show, again, lined up for you today. Kudos to our producer, Matt Renner, who works hard 24-7 to bring good guests and interesting topics to our program. In just a few minutes, we're going to dial up Brazil, the current location of Glenn Greenwald, who is an attorney and a blogger. And he has inside information about an attempt by Senate leader Bill Frist to neuter the Intelligence Committee of the Senate. And he suggests that the motive is A, to try to avoid further investigation of the pre-war intelligence failures, and specifically whether the Bush administration misused intelligence. And secondly, to try to block or water down an investigation of the Bush administration's flatly illegal NSA spying program. We'll get details. I'm going to give you a few before Glenn joins us in about 10 minutes, and then he'll be on the air with us for about 10 minutes. And I think it'll be interesting to see what developed. There was going to be a showdown vote in the Senate Intel Committee today. I haven't found any news about it, but we'll see if Glenn has an update for us. Also on today's show, Professor of Politics from the University of San Francisco, Stephen Zunis, returns. We're going to talk about that civil war in Iraq. 80% of Americans now believe Iraq is on the verge of civil war. That leaves Bush, Cheney, and just a few others who remain in deep denial. Jason Leopold returns to our show, and he has accepted our invitation to become a regular. He is the reporter who is breaking news on a regular basis about the ongoing Fitzgerald investigation of the leak of Valerie Plame Wilson's identity in an effort to smear Joe Wilson over the Niger uranium claims of the Bush administration. He's also covering the Enron trial, where Andy Fastow's making news today. And Jason Leopold has pissed me off just a little bit because he has written a memoir. That's what it is. It's a memoir called News Junkie. And I'm about halfway through, and I can't put it down. In fact, it was a little bit of a struggle to start the show today. Also on the program today, Melanie Sloan, her weekly appearance. She is the Executive Director of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, where they have no ethics commission because the Senate is blocking it. That's a proposal from various watchdog groups that apparently isn't going anywhere. And we're also going to talk about a news story about Rick Santorum, the arch-conservative senator from Pennsylvania who appears to be holier than every last one of us. And he's got another ethical challenge related to a charity that he started a few years ago. That's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Your calls are welcome at any moment, 831-899-5792 for the Central Coast, toll-free from Eureka or anywhere if you happen to be listening online. That number is 888-579-2540, 888-579-2540. And you can email me, Peter, at krxa540.com. That's Peter at krxa540.com. A couple of stories I just wanted to touch on briefly. The University of California has been ordered to pay more than $33 million to about 40,000 students who claim that their fees had been improperly raised. This from a courtroom in San Francisco, Superior Court Judge James Warren. And I think that's good news for college students here in California. The bad news for college students and law school students is that a unanimous ruling was handed down by the new Roberts Supreme Court, and the opinion was written by the new Chief Justice himself, which threw out a lawsuit trying to stop military recruiters from coming onto the campuses of law schools because of the discriminatory don't ask, don't tell policy embraced by the military. And many people, myself included, felt that that was a bit of a legal stretch. But I resent the idea that a law school could be threatened with a cutoff of federal funds, and even, for example, the Stanford Law School might reject recruiters, and then the business school or the School of Sociology or Psychology could lose federal fundings or Stanford Hospital. I think that is sweeping, and it's the kind of big government that conservatives always tell us they're so deeply against. Oh, yeah, that's what they tell us. Also, I just got a note from the office of Congressman Sam Farr, who's going to do the right thing tonight. There's a vote in the House of Representatives, the final vote on reauthorization of the Patriot Act, and they're not even permitting any real debate. The congressman did make a statement on the floor, but there's no active debate going on, and it will be rubber-stamped by the Republican-controlled Congress, and I'm very disappointed to see that. Also disappointed to see that California Senator Barbara Boxer voted for this extension of the Patriot Act last week. I was very surprised, and when we get a chance, we'll ask her to explain that, as I would like to know. Now, the issue we're going to discuss in just a couple of minutes with Glenn Greenwald is another one of these Friday afternoon news bombs. Bill Frist dropped it on Friday at 5:30 p.m., and very little coverage has occurred. The blogosphere has a couple of stories. Knight Ridder Newspapers published one on Monday. But the gist of it is that Bill Frist is threatening the Democrats with a reconfiguration of the Intelligence Committee, which would end its bipartisan structure, which has been a long-running standard there. And he says he has to do this because of partisanship. Not only that, stifling partisanship. This is the letter he sent out to Harry Reid late last Friday, and it reads, "I'm increasingly concerned that the Senate Intelligence Committee is unable to carry out its critically important oversight and threat assessment responsibilities due to stifling partisanship that is exhibited through repeated calls by Democrats on the committee to conduct politically motivated investigations." Yeah, he doesn't want any investigations. And frankly, Jay Rockefeller, who is the ranking Democrat on that committee, to me, is a wimp. He's got the right ideas, but he doesn't fight for them. And in my view, you know, he is hardly stifling partisan in his approach, and he doesn't want to conduct politically motivated investigations. He's afraid to do that. But he does want to conduct investigations. I don't think they would be highly partisan, because after all, there are three members of this Intelligence Committee who have articulated concerns consistent with the Democrats on these very issues. I also see that, in my opinion, Senator Frist is trying to do what he can to shut down the ongoing investigation of pre-war intelligence. And that is a shameful, shameful effort, but not surprising in these stifling partisan times. And the stifling partisanship originates from the Republicans, and then they turn around and try to blame the Democrats for it. We'll talk more about this in just a moment when Glenn Greenwald joins us and see if there were any developments in this story in Washington today. That's straight ahead right here. It's 314, and you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. It's tax time again, and there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund and, through electronic filing, get you that refund as soon as you need it. In 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, the choice is yours. The personnel of Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just 2 blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to bring a copy of your 2004 federal and California returns, W-2 1099 info for 2005. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville.
Is what you're doing in the market working for you? Are you happy with the results? Are you making money? Sundays at 2 p.m., KRXA is proud to present a new show entitled Safe Money and Retirement Talk, hosted by R.J. Moyer of About College Funding and the Protect My Assets Radio Network. R.J. will present the latest information necessary to help you protect your money and ensure a comfortable retirement. Join R.J. Moyer every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. for Safe Money and Retirement Talk, right here on KRXA 540.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just 2 blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
I'm Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Show. Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m., we'll explore Monterey Bay regional wine and food, markets, restaurants, menus, and prices. I'll interview winemakers, chefs, and other key players. We'll put food and wine together, and then we'll take them apart. If it's handcrafted beer or goat's milk and it's good, let's talk about it. Join me every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. to discuss food, wine, and fun in the Monterey Bay region, and especially delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored in part by Kitchen Studio.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily from 10 to 7.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 3:19. And we dedicate this next segment to listener activism. And we tip our hat to KRXA listener Paula Kant, who emailed me yesterday with a link to TomPaine.com, a great website based in D.C. And it was the first I have heard of the Friday afternoon news bomb that was dropped by Bill Frist last week when he thought nobody was looking. Well, Glenn Greenwald was looking. He's been paying attention to the issues related to the Senate Intelligence Committee. And what we have here is a threat by the Senate Majority Leader, Bill Frist of Tennessee, a lame duck by his own choice, who has written a letter that is the news bomb I was talking about on Friday. And Glenn, join us now from Brazil this afternoon. Thanks for being on the program today.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Tell us a little bit about how you read this letter from Bill to Harry. The dear Senator Reid was crossed off, and he wrote in that personal, intimate touch of Harry.
That was very nice of him. It was actually my blog has been following the development of the NSA scandal very closely for quite some time, and have had several discoveries with my readers where we found documents and evidence that before the national media did, that sort of made its way into the national media. And this one was one really that was found by a reader of my blog who posted a link to Senator Frist's letter to Senator Reid, which I read. It was sent on very late Friday afternoon, and what it basically said was, it appears that the Senate Intelligence Committee might decide to investigate the NSA program, the warrantless eavesdropping, and I'm very concerned about this. And if it does, if the Intelligence Committee decides to hold this investigation, I will take all possibilities into consideration as a response, including fundamentally changing what the Intelligence Committee is in order to make it like all of the other committees.
And this is a new kind of nuclear option.
Right. It's the Intelligence Committee has existed since 1976 for the last 30 years, and it has very different rules than all the other Senate committees because it was decided 30 years ago that it's very important that it not be subsumed by partisan battles. And so the Intelligence Committee is very different in that it gives the minority party on the committee a lot more power than most minorities have on other committees. And what Frist said was, unless the committee votes not to hold these hearings, I'm going to restructure the entire committee, and I'm going to render the minority meaningless like they are on all the other committees and make them like all the other committees. So he's basically going to change the rules unless he gets the outcome that he wants.
And Glenn, do you surmise, as I do, that the two issues that Frist is trying to bring under control, under damage control, are the NSA spying case and the outstanding issue related to this Senate Intelligence Committee's job to investigate the pre-war intelligence? And they did a little bit of work before the 2004 elections. They've promised to complete it and speak to whether or not the Bush administration manipulated intelligence. I believe they did, and I'd love to see this investigation go forward, but it has been stymied.
Well, that was, part of what was so outrageous about Senator Frist's letter was the excuse that he gave as to why he didn't want these hearings to go forward was because he said it's very important that the committee not be distracted in doing its very important oversight work. And, of course, the reason why that's a joke is because the Intelligence Committee has done no oversight at all on any of these intelligence controversies, including, most prominently, the fact that we went to war based on the intelligence claim that there were these weapons that never existed. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you heard, but within the last 20, 25 minutes or so, the Intelligence Committee concluded its closed-door hearing today, and apparently, according to CNN, the details are sort of sketchy, but on a party-line vote of 8-7, they voted not to investigate the eavesdropping program of the National Security Agency. They
really?
Voted not to investigate. So maybe Senator Frist's threats worked, but the Intelligence Committee continues to abdicate its responsibilities.
This is really astounding and deeply disturbing. And it is a joke and bitter irony, the language used in the Frist letter here, that he made this threat due to stifling partisanship that is exhibited through repeated calls by Democrats on the committee to conduct politically motivated investigations. Now, let's parse this a little bit. This is a Tom DeLay tactic where he takes his behavior and projects it onto the Democrats and then blames them for being partisan or, you know, that sort of thing. And this is just, directly lifted from the delay playbook. And then to say that repeated calls by Democrats on the committee to conduct politically motivated investigations. Well, as you point out in your blog, Glenn, it's not just Democrats who support this idea of investigations on both NSA spying and the pre-war intelligence.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the only way that there could have been an investigation is if Republicans on that committee had agreed that there should be, and who knows what happened that caused them to change their minds. But Senator Snow and Senator Hagel, as well as Senator DeWine, have all issued statements since the New York Times reported on this program saying that it is imperative that the Senate investigate exactly what it was that the administration was doing. I mean, the whole point of the Intelligence Committee is to conduct oversight on controversial intelligence programs. So that's the purpose of the Intelligence Committee. That's why it exists. So to call it a partisan investigation is silly, both because of course the Intelligence Committee has to investigate a controversial intelligence program. That's why it exists. But more to the point, the only way that the Intelligence Committee was even going to investigate was if it had the support of both Democrats and Republicans. Democrats alone can't do an investigation.
Well, and Glenn, the FISA law is explicit in terms that it is the only source of authority for domestic wiretapping, and it is equally explicit that the intelligence committees of both houses shall be fully briefed, and not just the chairs or a couple of hand-picked members. And so the committee has been skunked by this administration and now appears to be laying down to get sprayed again.
It's really amazing, and I've been writing about this scandal almost every day since it first was revealed more than 2 months ago now, and sometimes one forgets just how simple this issue really is. I mean, the American people enacted a law in 1978 making it a criminal offense for the government to eavesdrop on Americans without judicial approval and judicial oversight, and the administration just went and ignored the law and went and did exactly what the law criminalizes them doing. And you're absolutely right. There's another law that says that any eavesdropping or any surveillance on Americans has to be briefed to the full Intelligence Committee, and they broke that law as well. And now, not only is the Congress saying that they aren't going to hold the administration accountable for their lawbreaking, they've decided today that they're not even going to investigate. I mean, there's still all kinds of questions about what the administration did here. Are there other programs we don't know about? Who exactly did they spy on? Did they spy on domestic conversations, as it appears, even though they said they didn't? We're never going to have the answers to those questions because the Congress today decided that they're not going to investigate them.
And, Glenn, that's not all. Yesterday's lead editorial in the New York Times pointed out that Arlen Specter and others are preparing legislation to essentially retroactively legalize these violations of the law. And they compared it to this. They said it sounds absurd, but imagine you get stopped for speeding and then the local legislature raises the limit so you won't have to pay the fine. Well, that's what we're contemplating here. And there's one other key failure, and that's the American media. You broke this story. TomPaine.com is the place where people can read more about it, and there's a link to your blog from there. But I was able to find only one article about this in Knight Ridder newspapers published on Monday.
Right. The media has done just an extraordinarily poor job of informing the public, which is the role of the media, what this scandal really is about. And there was about a month ago when, actually, as I mentioned, there was another story broken on my blog where the administration had sent out the General Hayden, who ran the NSA, to explain why they eavesdropped outside the law. And the excuse he gave was that probable cause is too difficult of a standard for them to meet, and so they have to eavesdrop without that standard. And as it turned out, there was a whole committee hearing in 2003 where the administration said, we like the law as it is, there's no reason to change the law. It was right there in the public domain. The media never found it. It contradicts everything the administration is saying about why they broke the law. And a lot of these stories now get broken in the blogosphere because the media is just so inept and slothful, and they don't exercise any skepticism over the claims by the government.
Yeah. Glenn, thank you for your work. Thanks for joining us today.
Appreciate it, Peter. Thank you.
Glenn Greenwald blogs on the Internet. Find the link at TomPaine.com. That's the simplest way to get there. Coming up next, Professor Stephen Zunis from the University of San Francisco talks about the civil war in Iraq and Bush's nuclear deal with India. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540. If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Life's journey is both exciting and challenging. There are times when we all need a knowledgeable and caring guide to assist us along our life's path. If you or someone you know is facing retirement, let Michelle Ashen of Ashen Senior Resources provide you with the insightful and reasoned assistance that can only be obtained by many years of dedicated study and professional experience as a certified estate planner. Michelle Ashen will show you how to create and grow wealth, how to protect and preserve your life savings. She'll show you how to distribute a portion of your life savings in the most tax-advantaged way while you are living, and how to facilitate the distribution of the remainder of your life savings in the most tax-advantaged way when you pass away. Let Michelle Ashen of Ashen Senior Resources share with you the benefit of her specialized knowledge and expertise. Make the most of your life and life savings. Call Michelle Ashen for a free consultation, 641-0236. That's 641-0236.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Imagine how nice it would be if your mortgage broker knew as much about the ins and outs of specialized lending programs as your trusted mechanic knows about your car. A mortgage broker willing to take the time to open the hood of your financial strengths while checking under the engine for costly money leaks. Make sure your mortgage broker has the experience, integrity, and know-how to provide you the optimal financial tune-up for your particular circumstances. Giving you staying power over the long haul and the capacity to take advantage of life's opportunities as they chance to appear.
Hi, I'm Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Give me a call today at 757-0436. 757-0436. I'm Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage and looking forward to working with you.
I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I'll bring you interesting topics and personalities from the world of food, wine, and fun. Guests on the Tasty Planet have included wine experts, winemakers, restaurateurs, famous chefs, and others that have made the Monterey Bay region such a delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored in part by PG Liquors at 229 Grand in Pacific Grove. Stop by today for all your quality beverage needs and ask them about their single malt scotch tasting on March 22nd. And tell them the Tasty Planet sent you.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, where we deliver progressive talk and electric guitars. And the guitar work of The Edge, early U2. It's called Out of Control. I think it's the perfect setup for our next segment as Professor Stephen Zunis from the University of San Francisco joins us, where he's a professor of politics, chair of the Peace and Justice Studies Program, and he serves as a senior policy analyst and the Middle East editor for the Foreign Policy in Focus Project. Stephen, welcome back to our program.
Good to be back.
Nice to talk to you as usual. And out of control is the way many people see the scene in Iraq today. A new poll confirms what Congressman Murtha stated back in November, that the American people are way ahead of our president in denial and the administration on this issue. 80% believe that Iraq is on the verge of a civil war, and it's time to stop dancing around this term. I mean, we seem to kind of want to wish a lull in the fighting so that we can say, well, you know, this is just sectarian violence that pops up every now and then, but it's not a full-scale civil war. What's your take, Stephen?
Anyways, just a matter of semantics. It is certainly a low-level civil war at minimum, and there's certainly a lot of people are getting killed, and things seem to be getting worse before they're getting better. It really, things do seem to be spinning out of control, and in many ways, this was predictable. A lot of us before the invasion feared just that something just like this could happen. But what's rather frightening is that some of the architects of this war predicted it as well and didn't seem to have any problems with it.
Yeah. Now, as we hear the testimony of John Negroponte, he seems to be mildly upset that the carnage continues in Iraq, but it doesn't seem to really break his daily rhythm.
No, it's quite amazing how the, of course, he's nice and secure in the green zone, you know, there's not a whole, I think they know that things are falling apart, but they don't know what to do about it, and so I think they can just, pretend it's business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, and in part, the problem is that the occupation and the way it was handled in many ways brought this on. That they, with that power vacuum, the Shiites, which one of the few differences between Shiites and Sunnis actually is that the Shiites have a very hierarchical structure, and so when the power vacuum occurred with the ouster of Saddam Hussein, that the Shiite social institutions were able to fill that gap. They were able to organize very quickly. The United States purged the army and the bureaucracy of its secular elements, and so the Shiites kind of took that over. And meanwhile, the Sunnis, fearing that the Shiites were would come to power thanks to a U.S. invasion, would be advancing American interests and would not be good Arab nationalists, and fearing they might be too loyal to Iran, given that most of their leadership was in exile in the Islamic Republic, launched a rebellion. Some of them include extremist elements that killed innocent Shiite civilians, and then you have the security forces, particularly the Interior Ministry, that were trained by Iran's Revolutionary Guard, engaging in pretty nasty repression, which is taking a lot of civilian casualties, and so it's just getting a tit-for-tat kind of a struggle. We're already seeing small-scale ethnic cleansing going on in some neighborhoods.
Yeah. And at the same time, the U.S. has banked so much on standing up a government. That's the phrase that Vice President Cheney likes to use, as if, you know, it's just flat on the ground and all we have to do is tilt it upward. And once it's standing, we can say, oh, there's a government. We can go now. But the efforts to form a new government have been compounded by the incident, the attack on the Golden Mosque in Samarra, and the street violence that followed that. And now they're calling for the ouster of the acting Prime Minister, Al-Jafari. And so trying to reach consensus and really build any kind of a government that can actually secure the nation seems pretty remote at this point, doesn't it, Stephen?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. And it's not just a matter of, these are ancient hatreds or whatever. I mean, differences between Sunnis and Shiites are theologically are even less than that between Catholics and Protestants. The basic problem is that when the United States failed to secure the country as it was obliged to do under the Fourth Geneva Convention, if you're going to occupy a place, you need to be able to provide basic security. People sought shelter and protection in these ethnic militias, some of which were pretty radical and chauvinistic. And the more the killing goes on, and the less capable the regular armed forces in the U.S. Armed forces are capable of providing the security. People become more and more dependent on these militias, and we're getting a situation that quite reminiscent of Lebanon during their 15-year civil war.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we're also seeing the U.S. is scrambling now to try to weed out some of the Shiite extremists who have apparently infiltrated the army and the police force. But I'm not very optimistic about that effort, because if we were unable to screen them on their way in, how are we going to identify them once they have burrowed in?
Exactly. It's taking on momentum of its own. There's very little vetting, because we were so eager to show that, oh, we have this new government here and everything. And it's just... And so you're basically seeing the breakdown of any kind of centralized society. And what I fear is, again, a Lebanon-type situation of an on-again, off-again, low-level civil war with various clerical warlords with their little fiefdoms and militias, and a chronic sense of insecurity with a very, very weak central government that really won't be able to do much about it. And meanwhile, we'll have... American servicemen and women caught in the thick of all this stuff.
Yeah. And, Stephen, what do you see as the most critical developments of the past few weeks? The way the U.S. responded to the violence after the attack on the Golden Mosque, or is it some of the internal moves that Ambassador Khalilzad is taking to try to move these people along into a formation of a government, while trying to avoid an Iranian leaning Shiite theocracy becoming empowered in Baghdad?
I would not want to be in his shoes. I mean, it is really seems like a lose-lose situation. I mean, the only real hope is that there were a number of cases, fairly significant cases, in fact, of Sunnis and Shiites coming together, the protests, the violence, of protecting each other's neighborhoods and mosques. I mean, there were some impressive shows of unity. Unfortunately, it doesn't take but a well-armed minority on both sides to negate any effort that the majority might attempt for reconciliation. But what was significant about these unity marches, and there were dozens of them around the country, was that every one of them, Sunnis and Shiites alike, were denouncing the United States and calling for withdrawal of American forces, saying that the U.S. presence was just making the situation worse.
Well, come on. That's the golden, the silver lining. We've unified the country.
Yep. maybe too late, but there is a everything from what public opinion polling they've been able to do to just the reports to virtually every journalist and independent voice on the street, that rather than the United States calming things down and trying to prevent a civil war, our presence is just exacerbating the problem.
Yeah. And to what extent do you see Muqtada al-Sadr as a key player here? He's the fiery young cleric, and essentially he kind of delivered the swing votes in the last round of negotiations to permit the formation, or at least the national formation, of a government. And also after the attack on the Golden Mosque, he scurried back. I believe he was in Tehran. And did try to tamp things down in the streets a little bit. But he's the leader of one of those militias that you referred to a minute ago.
Yeah, he has been really trying to calm things down. He has been trying to prevent the more hot-headed elements in both communities from attacking each other. Again, he sees it's the problem is more the vestiges of the old Ba'athist regime and the United States, which really are to blame. But what's rather frightening about this is that while he's been playing something of a moderate role in these recent events, the fact that the central government is not holding, that they are it's becoming more and more a situation of militias and warlords and the like, that he's becoming more and more powerful. He's building up his base. He's building up the size of his army. He's becoming more of a power broker. And though again, he may not be an anti-Sunni chauvinist in a nasty way, he is very much of a ultra-hardline fundamentalist type, which I don't think anybody would, at least in and this side of the Atlantic would like to see having much power and influence in that country.
Mm-hmm. And, Stephen, to what extent do you think that the example of the way Hamas is being treated, after all, the U.S. and Israel encouraged a vote, they encouraged participation by all Palestinians, and son of a gun, Hamas came out with the majority in the parliamentary elections. They're now starting to form the government. They just stripped some of the power that had been granted to Abu Mazen, and so Hamas is starting to assert itself. At the same time, even before it begun to do so, Israel started proactive punitive measures, cutting off the transfer of Palestinian tax money back to the occupied territories for distribution to Palestinians. That really seems like a stretch under the circumstances. And so I'm wondering if this is a model that Iraqis see, that the U.S. talks a good game about democracy, but if the results don't turn out in our favor, then we use every means available to hamstring those who were elected.
It is rather ironic that the Senate passed a resolution by an overwhelming majority that included the line that no government in the world would allow a ruling political party to have its own militia, when just a few weeks earlier they had given a congratulatory resolution to the two main Shiite Iraqi parties, which themselves have an armed militia that while simultaneously trying to govern. I think the big problem, I think, with trying to punish the Palestinian people as a whole as a means of sharing our displeasure with Hamas is that it'll get people to rally around the flag that however Hamas may screw up in terms of their governance, they're going to be able to blame the United States and the Israelis instead of their own reactionary ideology. And to top it off, I'm sure that the Saudis and Iranians and others would be happy to pick up at least some of the slack, which, of course, would give them a greater influence among the Palestinians, which isn't a very good scenario either.
Yeah. We'll pick up as we continue in just a moment. Stephen Zunis is our guest, professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. In our next segment, I want to talk with him about Bush's trip to India and Pakistan and the deal he made over nuclear issues with India. That's coming up next, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
Tom Hartman,
chairman of Citicorp, Sanford Weill. He says, I think companies are realizing that we all have to be salesmen for America and not just sit back and rely on the government. I would point out to Mr. Weill, chairman of Citigroup, that his company is sending American jobs to other countries.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
Isn't this a great thing? We can use Indian labor for white-collar jobs while we're using Chinese labor for blue-collar jobs. I'm sorry, this just creeps me out.
Tom Hartman on KRXA 540.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
You've got the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm your humble host, Peter B. Tomorrow, Wednesday, I am the guest speaker at the Carmel Rotary. You've been warned. And tomorrow, our first guest on the program, retired Congressman Leon Panetta, right here tomorrow about 3:15 on the Peter B. Collins Show. We continue with Professor Stephen Zunis, professor of politics at the University of San Francisco, and he focuses on the Middle East and other issues. Stephen, next, I wanted to ask you about nuclear nonproliferation and why George W. Bush seems to have such an aversion to it. Now, we know he has trouble pronouncing nuclear, but is that word proliferation just too much for him?
Apparently so. I mean, his decision to sign this nuclear agreement with India is a violation of our understanding with the Group of 40, which is the other group of nuclear suppliers. It's a violation of our own U.S. Atomic Energy Act. It is also a violation of U.N. Security Council Resolution 1172, which forbids any member state from facilitating in any way India or Pakistan's nuclear program. And it's amazing that he's pushing for sanctions against Iran for a nuclear program that is at least 8 to 10 years away from producing even a single bomb,
right.
And yet he has no qualms with cooperating both militarily and in nuclear program with a country like India, which has refused to even sign the Non-Proliferation Treaty and has at least a few dozen nuclear warheads, and has already fought three wars with his nuclear neighbor Pakistan and came pretty darn close to a fourth one just a couple years ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's breathtaking in a number of ways. First of all, the agreement permits India to prevent inspections of 8 of 22 reactors in the country. So we are taking a big leap of faith. Bush is saying that we can trust India because it's been a good steward of its nuclear program. And as you pointed out, reportedly India possesses about 50 nuclear weapons in its arsenal to date. So that's one level right there that invites skepticism. Then when you look at the hypocrisy and the inconsistency of America's position, particularly vis-a-vis Iran and North Korea, where we tell them, we've got nukes, you can't have them, and we're going to do everything we can to stop you. Dick Cheney in the news today saying that Iran will never get a nuclear weapon. Well, these inconsistencies don't play well on the world stage.
Not at all. It's pretty clear that we're not interested in non-proliferation. We're interested in imposing a kind of nuclear apartheid on the world. And it's rather striking, in fact, that there have been calls from quite a few nations in South and Southwest Asia, including Iran, for the establishment of a nuclear weapons-free zone for that region. And that's not just some idealistic kind of dream. Nuclear weapons-free zones already exist for Africa, Latin America, South Pacific, Southeast Asia, Antarctica. In fact, South and Southwest Asia is the only part of the global South that is not currently a nuclear weapons-free zone. UN Security Council Resolution 687, which we used to justify the invasion of Iraq, even though Iraq was actually in compliance with its disarmament provisions at the time we invaded, called on Iraqi disarmament as part of a regional-wide disarmament and creation of a weapons of mass destruction free zone. And it was, in fact, there was a resolution, a draft UN Security Council resolution that came up just 3 years ago, calling for a nuclear weapons free zone for the Middle East. And it was tabled because of a threatening U.S. veto. So basically the line is, we can bring nuclear weapons to the region. Our allies, like Israel, Pakistan, and India, can have nuclear weapons. But if it's a country we don't like, we are even prepared to make war against you if you you even try to develop a nuclear program with weapons potential.
And the way the United States is viewed, and some of it is quite accurate, as a staunch ally of Israel, a staunch supporter of its possession of nuclear weapons, even though we wink and nod and bob and weave and don't explicitly say that we know Israel has nukes, everybody knows that. And this underscores the antagonism that many Arabs and Muslims in the Middle East feel toward the United States, because they see us as far too cozy with Israel and not balanced in an approach to the issues of the region.
Exactly. And in fact, it's rather ironic. I mean, if you were an Iranian, for example, and you saw your country listed as part of the Axis of Evil, along with Iraq and North Korea, and you noticed that Iraq had gotten rid of its nuclear weapons and allowed inspectors from the International Atomic Energy Agency back in to poke around wherever they wanted, and saw that they got invaded and their government overthrown anyway, and then you see North Korea, which threw out the IAEA inspectors and started developing nuclear weapons, and they're still in power, what lesson would you get from that? In other words, they're trying to impose this haves and haves not regime on that region is only encouraging the have-nots to become haves as a means of deterrence from a U.S. attack.
And so, Stephen, as we look at the deal with India over nuclear issues and compare it improbably to the controversy over the Dubai ports deal in the United States, is the Bush administration promoting the nuclear agenda of India as a way to develop exports for America's nuclear power companies, like General Electric, who makes reactors and some of the other equipment used in the conversion of nuclear energy to electricity? Is this a business-oriented deal, or is this driven by deep policy issues that you and I simply can't appreciate?
It's really hard to say. But if we were to assume that the intentions are perfectly peaceful in terms of India, nuclear power, even for completely peaceful purposes, is a very dangerous and inefficient and expensive technology. You just look at what happened at Bhopal, I think, which the biggest industrial accident in history, where 20,000 people died in that Indian accident. The country does not have a great history of safeguards against dangerous industrial sites. The very fact that in India you have 400 million people who lack basic electricity and running water. Even though you do have a growing middle class, the Human Development Index, according to the United Nations, ranks India down there with Central American countries. That if you wanted to have sustainable development, as President Bush claims this nuclear project is about, you would start the grassroots with development projects that initiates solar energy and wind power and geothermal, and try to have to build up the village-based economy as Gandhi and other pioneers of India's independence wanted. This is just, even putting aside the military question, this is not the kind of third world development we want to be encouraging.
Indeed. Stephen, thank you for joining us today. Good to talk with you again.
My pleasure.
Stephen Zunis, professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. Coming up next, Jason Leopold joins us. He's going to be a regular on the program now. He's broken a lot of details about the Plamegate, Valerie Wilson, Joe Wilson controversy, Karl Rove, you know it. We'll get details on that, the Enron investigation, and Jason's new book, News Junkie, coming up next hour right here.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily from 10 to 7.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
After nursing her husband for years, Dana Reeve dies of lung cancer.
Just when you think you're coming out, you know, and you think, okay, it's all right, I see the light at the end of the tunnel, and then I got this diagnosis.
A new book says Barry Bonds did use steroids big time.
The game was headed towards an era of pure slugging, and he decided to remake himself.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Less than 2 months ago, it looked like Dana Reeve might beat lung cancer.
We had a moment, just one moment.
She sang at a tribute in New York to hockey legend Mark Messier. The widow of actor Christopher Reeve had said she was responding to treatment, beating the odds. But then came the sad news this morning that she was dead at 44. Reeve had been diagnosed last summer, just 10 months after her husband died. She went to her doctor with a nagging cough.
What I didn't know is that lung cancer is the number one cancer. I, of course, we're always looking for, you know, breast and ovarian and uterine, and, you know, you don't think, and I'm a non-smoker, and I live in the country, so I think yeah. I'm good. And so I was completely shocked.
CBS News medical correspondent Dr. Emily Sine says Dana Reeve's case was not all that rare.
While it is the more unusual scenario that someone who never smoked would develop lung cancer, 10 to 15% of the cases do occur in non-smokers.
And many times the cancer is too aggressive and too far advanced for successful treatment. Dana Reeve leaves a 13-year-old son, Will, and two adult stepchildren. Now this.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic weekend getaway? Well, how about 3 days and two nights in Las Vegas at a major strip resort? And what about you don't pay a dime for it? That's right. Act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas's newest five-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge, stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on Earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on, you know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. So stop what you're doing and call this special toll-free number, 866-71-LUCKY. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 866-71-LUCKY for all the exciting details. That's 866-71-LUCKY. Call now.
San Francisco Giants slugger Barry Bonds has repeatedly and consistently denied use of performance-enhancing drugs, but a detailed new book challenges those claims. Co-author Lance Williams says Bonds bulked up for at least five seasons, starting in 1998.
The entire pharmacopoeia spanned 10 drugs. It also included Clomid, that's an anti-estrogen drug that was used as a masking agent in a way to elude drug tests.
Williams says Bond started using because he was determined to beat his home run rival Mark McGwire. More from CBS News chief investigative correspondent Armin Katayan.
A floater to Bonds.
At an age when most players broke down, Bonds broke out, cracking a third of his home runs after the age of 35, including besting McGwire's record with 73 homers in 2001. Dogged by rumors of steroid use, he has steadfastly denied taking any banned substances and lashed out at the press. This was Bonds a year ago.
You guys wanted to hurt me bad enough, you finally got there. You wanted to bring me down. You finally brought me and my family down.
But when his story came out, Sports Illustrated writer Tom Verducci found a more subdued Barry Bonds.
I was at his locker today when he found out that this excerpt was being published and that there is a book out chronicling his steroid usage. He seemed to be knocked back on his heels a little bit. He didn't have much of a strong response as he has in the past.
On Capitol Hill, the House is voting right now on a compromise proposal to renew the Patriot Act.
After 2 months of Senate filibusters, White House threats, and fights between the House and Senate, this is the final vote, and the Patriot Act renewal now goes to President Bush for his signature. It makes 14 of the 16 most controversial parts of the act permanent law, renewing for 4 years the most contentious provisions, allowing roving wiretaps and secret searches of business records, including those of hospitals, hotels, and libraries.
CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez says the tools of the Patriot Act have been extremely valuable in deterring and preventing terrorist attacks. The government put its star witness on the stand today at the Enron trial. Former Chief Financial Officer Andrew Fastow testified that he felt like a hero as he orchestrated transactions to inflate the company's earnings. Once, in a conversation with his boss, Jeffrey Skilling, Fastow says Skilling told him, "Get me as much of that juice as you can." You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
For me, buying a home is more than the number of bedrooms and bathrooms.
Can't imagine making a purchase like that without having someone you can trust.
Somebody with integrity protecting you.
Ethics are crucial.
Honesty and dependability.
I can't call myself a realtor unless I complete ethics training.
Realtors adhere to a strict code of ethics, so you know you'll be treated honestly. Ask if your agent is a realtor, a member of the National Association of Realtors.
They live and work by a code of ethics, and that was really important to me.
Hey, it's me, Regis Philbin. When you were a kid, you loved the fun side of Welch's grape juice. You know, the big grape taste, the purple mustache? Well, it turns out there's a surprising side to Welch's, too, because studies have shown that Welch's 100% grape juice is actually good for your heart. Made from deep purple Concord grapes with no added sugar, Welch's is packed with natural antioxidants, twice the antioxidant power of orange juice. So grab a glass of Welch's 100% grape juice, the most delicious thing you can do for your heart.
It's 4:06 and you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. At least I think so. And that makes me Peter B. Collins. Coming next hour, our weekly visit from Melanie Sloan, the Executive Director of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. This hour, Jason Leopold returns. Country's oh so strong. That's My Country Right or Wrong, Midnight Oil, Peter Garrett and the Ozzie Gang. And I guess that's the attitude inside the White House. They can do no wrong. They can even order Scooter Libby to dispense classified information. Well, that's the story that Jason Leopold has been covering and doing a great job on. And we have more information on Plamegate, the Rove investigation, however you like to refer to it today. Jason, welcome back to our show.
Thanks, Peter. Good to be back.
And thanks for accepting our non-compensated offer to be a regular on the show.
My pleasure.
we'll have our people get to you with the compensation package.
Yes, please make sure I get my tax form.
Okay.
So I can complete that.
All right. We'll definitely get that out just as soon as we have a reason to.
There you go.
Well, I want to talk with you today about the update that you filed at truthout.org on Monday, March 6th. That was just yesterday. Also want to talk with you a little bit about the history of the California energy crisis.
Yeah.
And we'll spend a little time talking about your powerful new book called News Junkie, which I believe is a memoir.
It is a memoir, which is a scary word to use to describe a book these days.
Has Oprah called yet?
She hasn't. I've been trying to get in touch with her, but it's not happening.
All right. Well, maybe it will. We'll talk about the book in the second half hour of our show today. Let's talk now about Scooter Libby, the Joe Wilson scam, and the efforts by the Bush administration to smear Joe Wilson, starting in the spring of 2003,
sure.
Right about the time that we were launching the war on Iraq, just about 3 years ago today.
Yeah, it's sort of the anniversary, and you know what happened was that the actual campaign to discredit Joe Wilson began 3 years ago, and that's when he became a mark on the administration's radar. Specifically, Cheney's office. A lot of people were wondering, what did Bush know at the time? And I got to tell you, that is, in 3 years of investigating this, it appears that, the president did not know, participate in anything regarding the Joe Wilson smear campaign and the leaking of his wife's identity, Valerie Plame Wilson, the CIA operative.
Well, let me jump in on that, just because the one episode that seems to at least circumstantially suggest that the
yeah.
president could have known or should have known was that lengthy flight to Africa just a few days after Wilson's op-ed piece was published in the New York Times, July of 2003.
Right, right. And I'll even go further than that. I think that in the build-up to actually what happened, what took place in March of 2003, right up until the time that Joe Wilson published that op-ed piece in the New York Times, I don't believe that there may be some evidence out there that the president or Ari Fleischer, who was the press secretary at the time, may have been speaking to the vice president's office about what to do about this guy. However, I don't believe that they were involved in any sort of campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because this was a very, very personal issue. This was an attack on Cheney. That's the way Cheney had viewed this. And I can tell you that I spoke to 12 different people who work at the State Department, the CIA, and the National Security Council, all of whom had some role or a connection in this entire issue of Joe Wilson. And, basically what happened was that back in October of 2003, the first time that we really sort of got a sense that the president may have known that something was going on is when he said, this is a town full of leaks, and it's very unlikely we'll ever find out who the leaker is.
Yeah.
And, when you look at what's going on right now with the NSA spy scandal and how they're, going after journalists, you kind of wonder, why is one thing more important than the other? So to me, it suggests that, of course, it's all circumstantial, but there was something there.
Mm-hmm.
But this, when Joe Wilson went on CNN, and even before that, he was on the on PBS, I think it's on the Bill Moyer show, if that's where it's on. He had really attacked the administration for, citing the Niger intelligence, which suggested that Iraq was trying to purchase uranium. Now, at the time, he did not say that he was the special envoy who traveled to Iraq, but he vehemently denied that there was any truth to, the intelligence. And nobody really, knew what, why he, was so passionate in saying this. But that is when Joe Wilson got on the, when he was on Cheney's radar and Libby's radar, and it kicked off a campaign to, shut him down.
Now, Jason Leopold, I do take your point that there's no evidence that the president participated in the planning of the leak regarding Valerie Plame Wilson. But it does appear that Dick Cheney was integrally involved.
This was, when I say that he was, hands-on, I mean, that's not even putting it... I can't even find the right words to say how involved Dick Cheney was in this. I mean, I believe that evidence will come out, and it will take a while. It will definitely take a while, but there's no doubt in my mind that in the months or even years ahead, as we really learn about this, that we're going to learn that the vice president was, orchestrated this. And I'm willing to, actually investigate these stories and put it out there simply because of, the confidence I have in my sources and in the documents that they produced and have shown me and have read to me that suggest that. This is really, in my opinion, I believe that this is a possible conspiracy, and I absolutely believe at this point that the special prosecutor is investigating the vice president, is investigating his role, and there will be, other people named down the road.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break and continue with Jason Leopold. If you have a question or comment relating to this investigation and the leak of Joe Wilson's wife's identity, the efforts to smear him because of what he was saying, which, of course, was true, join us on the line right now. Central Coast, 831-899-5792. North Coast, it's toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'm Dan Brown, president of At Your Service Premier Event Planning and Transportation. We specialize in events ranging from a two-person anniversary or 200 guests attending the great AT&T or the concourse. We have a fleet of sedans, limousines, vans, mini coaches, as well as vintage cars that make any event special. Weddings, wine tours, or corporate events, give us a call, 625-5363, or check us out on the web, MontereyLimos.com.
Join R.J. Moyer for his new weekend show about college funding this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540. Sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
If you own a Volvo and you want quality repairs and great service at a fair price, then take your Volvo to Hunt's Auto Repair in Seaside. They only work on Volvos, and they can do any needed service and repair, including all factory recommended maintenance. Owner Mike Brooks is a Volvo certified and factory trained technician with over 16 years experience. Mike's partner Tracy is also a factory trained Volvo service advisor. Many Volvo owners in the area already know and trust Tracy to take care of their Volvos.
Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside, is a locally owned and family operated full service Volvo repair shop, where Mike and I feature honest, quality service at a fair price.
Bring your Volvo to us, and we'll do everything possible to ensure that you leave satisfied and fully informed about your Volvo. Remember, that's Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside. For more info, give us a call at 583-9820.
That's 583-9820.
KRXA 540 checks your traffic on the ride home. It's 418, and here's today's report starring Metro Diane.
We have an accident in Santa Cruz. It's northbound 1 at Emmeline Avenue. Solo vehicle involved in this accident there. Also, San Juan Bautista Highway 156 east of 101. We have an accident involving a motorcycle there, so emergency crews are en route to check for any injuries. Also an accident in Monterey County. It's Highway 68 at San Venancio Road. Three vehicles involved in this. All the vehicles have been moved over to the right-hand shoulder. This report is brought to you by Advil. You don't need different pain relievers for different pains. Wherever you hurt, Advil works. Advil, the every pain reliever. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Diane. We'll check back with you about 445. And Casey has your traffic every weekday morning on the Stephanie Miller Show right here on KRXA 540. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
First thing went and stole the election. The Supreme Court made the selection. The corporations gave the direction. They said push it. He went and hired his daddy's staff and a few guys from Nixon's just for a laugh. Now the world is his oyster, split in half. Bush it. Though he'd never been to a foreign land, had a map of the world he'd never understand. Right up his back went the puppeteer's hand. Bush it.
We continue on the PBC show with investigative reporter Jason Leopold. You can read his work at truthout.org. And we're talking right now about an article that he published just yesterday, March 6th, at Truthout, regarding the CIA leak path. And one of the people who figures prominently in the early portion of this story, Jason, is Bob Woodward, the guy who really was instrumental in exposing the truth about the Watergate scandal at great expense. He worked very hard on that, and Nixon used every tool available to try to thwart their reporting.
Right.
And today, he's a kind of embedded lapdog for the Bush administration.
Yeah, and you know, it's really sad. I actually think that's really sad, and the, you know, remarks that he had made during the course of the investigation, how Fitzgerald was, you know, the prosecutor, a junkyard dog type prosecutor, and that, you know, this was really much ado about nothing. I think that considering how involved he was, how privileged he is as a journalist in obtaining information that nobody else is able to obtain, you know, really probably set the tone for how other journalists may have looked at this. I mean, when Bob Woodward writes a story, or if he publishes a book, you know, he's still looked at as the, you know, quintessential scandal type journalist who can unearth these wrongdoings in government. But since Bush was elected, since Bush was, you know, named president, sometimes I slip up there. You know, Bob Woodward has really demonstrated that he is an opportunist, and he certainly had a major role in this, in this scandal.
Well, run it down for us, because he actually was one of the first people who was handed this hot leak by presumably Cheney and Libby.
Yes, and what happened was is that in March of 2003, when Joe Wilson first started, talking about the, you know, the flawed intelligence, that really sort of got to the administration started to work, and in Cheney's office they started to meet. What can we do about this guy? The Iraq War started. Weapons of mass destruction were not found, but during the course of the war, Wilson had fallen off the radar. He popped up again after the start of the war, and the fact that there were no weapons of mass destruction to be found, he suddenly became, you know, interesting again to several journalists he had been speaking to, one of which was Nicholas Kristof, who's a columnist for the New York Times, and he told him on background that there was no truth to, you know, the intelligence, which is considered the silver bullet, the uranium claims that, you know, that Iraq was trying to buy yellow cake uranium. And he started making, you know, waves again and really causing a problem for the administration. Particularly, though, it really became a personal, very personal to Cheney and Libby. And in order to counter to counter what he was saying, to undercut his credibility and, you know, just attack the veracity of, you know, what the administration thought was, or what Cheney's office again thought was, you know, not true. They handpicked several journalists to basically to meet with and to provide them with information in the highly sensitive National Intelligence Estimate, a classified document showing that, you know, or purportedly showing how Iraq tried to obtain uranium from Niger, which at the time was just absolutely bogus. In fact, you had Mohammed El-Baradei, the head of the International Atomic Energy Association, saying so. So mm-hmm. Woodward met with Libby on June 27th, 2003, at Libby's office, and on orders from Cheney, and Cheney instructed Libby to provide Woodward with this particular intelligence.
And just let me pause here. The source for what you just said, that Cheney instructed Libby to do that, is arguments filed by Libby's attorneys before the court that is processing his indictment.
That's correct. Yes, and in that court filing, Libby actually, it says that Libby testified before a grand jury that he was authorized by his quote unquote superiors to leak this information.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I should let you and your listeners know that I have spoken to four people who were at this meeting in Cheney's office, who are, you know, now cooperating with the investigation. And that is, you know, that this is what happened. The you know, but the Vice President Cheney had authorized Libby to leak this. Now, you made a very good point last week when we spoke, when we were discussing this, that, you know, the executive order giving Cheney, you know, this this power, you know, happened to be signed 4 days after the start of the war, around the same time that you know, that they started the campaign to discredit Wilson. Now, you know, maybe it's a coincidence, but there's certainly you know, there's a possibility maybe it was timed. Because from what we know so far, all the information that was leaked or that Cheney declassified was used to simply attack, you know, this former ambassador. It mm-hmm. wasn't used for any other reason. I mean, we have Judith Miller, who used to work at the New York Times, that Libby met with about a week or two after he met with Woodward. That was the second time he had met with her. And he also gave her that same information. But Woodward, this, you know, the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, assistant managing editor at the Washington Post, was the very first person who received this. And he received it, the information from the National Intelligence Estimate, in hopes that he would write a story for the Post.
Right. Now, Jason, in the meeting that you cited a moment ago, where you have four sources who you can't name but who were there, was this a Cheney staff meeting, or was this a more formal meeting of WIG, the White House Iraq group that includes Rove and Jim Wilkinson and a bunch of other people?
Yes, it was the White House Iraq group. And, you know, I didn't want to go into too much detail simply because we know who's members of the White House Iraq group and, you know, could sort of deconstruct and remove certain names from that. And maybe
well, you're on
out.
To me. You're on to me, Jason.
But, yes, that was the that was the meeting. And it was the second such meeting that they had with specific regard to Wilson. And, you know, there was a meeting that took place also in March mm-hmm. when, you know, the first time.
And the reason I asked the question, not to try to suss out your sources, but is to see if Karl Rove was still intricately involved in the process at that point.
Karl Rove was definitely involved. And here's there's two things. And I feel so confident that this is going to come out. You know, maybe not tomorrow, and when I say come out, you know, where you'll start reading about it, where other people will start seeing it in more of the mainstream news media, is that there were two things. You had some people who wanted to really, you know, go the distance and say, let's leak her name,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, immediately shut him down that way. And then you had others, you know, like
say it, Cheney, say it in 10 seconds and we'll come back and do it more.
You know, and you had others like, you know, like Cheney, who was saying, well, let's declassify.
All right, more with Jason Leopold after this break.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
You already know that Joe Rombi's La Mia Cucina in Pacific Grove serves the best Italian meals this side of Roma in an elegant, comfortable setting. What you may not know is that you can also enjoy Joe Rombi's incomparable cuisine in the comfort of your family room, dining room, or kitchen. Your only stop for such delicacies as portobello mushroom ravioli, spaghetti bolognese, crab cakes, and sand dabs is Joe Rombi's La Piccola Casa in PG on 17th, just above Lighthouse. Drop by on your way home from work or anytime. And if you're looking for the ideal private room for your next party, look no further than Joe Rombi's La Piccola Casa and La Mia Cucina. Joe Rombi has three rooms that can accommodate groups of any size from 16 to 60. For unforgettable meals in a private setting at your place or theirs, call 373-8116 or drop by La Piccola Casa, 17th Street between Lighthouse and Laurel in Pacific Grove.
Are you having a problem making your home loan payments? Do you have equity to protect? At your wit's end, trying to figure out how you'll be able to keep your home? Would you like to speak to a highly qualified loan agent who does not charge for advice? Hi, I'm John Sullivan of Executive Financial Services in Salinas. We can advise you about negotiating with your lender, and believe me, most lenders would rather negotiate with you than own your home. We can advise you about the foreclosure process and bankruptcy filings. If you need us, you can call us 7 days a week between 10 and 7 at 443-7277. We personally answer the phone and don't pre-screen our calls. We're here to give you advice. We can give you your options 5 minutes after reviewing your credit report. We might be able to help you. We might not be able to help you. But if you never call us, you'll never know. That's 443-7277 for a 5-minute solution. Executive Financial Services at 443-7277.
Where go? Tom Hartman.
The damage that this administration has done in just 5 years is mind-boggling.
It's the Tom Hartman Program.
As a bit of a student of history, I don't think that we have ever had an administration that has done so much harm to the United States of America as this administration, as the Bush administration, to our reputation abroad, to our body politic at home. I mean, it is absolutely mind-boggling.
Tom Hartman, live every morning 9 to noon on KRXA 540, the new Radio Free America.
I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I'll bring you interesting topics and personalities from the world of food, wine, and fun. Guests on the Tasty Planet have included wine experts, winemakers, restaurateurs, famous chefs, and others that have made the Monterey Bay region such a delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored in part by PG Liquors at 229 Grand in Pacific Grove. Stop by today for all your quality beverage needs and ask them about their single malt scotch tasting on March 22nd. And tell them the Tasty Planet sent you.
4:33 now. I'm Peter B. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show with investigative reporter Jason Leopold. He's out there watching the detectives as they're dragging the lake. Now, Jason, before the break, and by the way, I apologize. Some of the breaks we cannot stop. It's like a freight, like a freight train coming through. You had 2 points to make about the intentions of Cheney et al.
Yeah. And, you know, people should be aware that this is an administration who demonstrated that they will prosecute people who leak, you know, people inside the administration who will leak. They despise leaks. So for the vice president to authorize a leak to a journalist, let's face it, Vice President Cheney is no friend of the media, demonstrates how personal, how important the issue of Joe Wilson can become for the office of the vice president, mm-hmm. and how badly they wanted to silence him. So, you know, that is something that, you know, you people should really, really pay attention to, because, you know, at first, you know, I feel that we've learned so much since the indictment of Souter Libby, because at first it was, you know, could the vice president have played a role? We're really not sure. I can tell you that, you know, I've turned over so many stones in the course of the past 4 months, and I'm blown away by how hands-on Vice President Cheney was in this. And I mm-hmm. absolutely believe that that will come out down the road.
Old question, maybe there's a new answer. Why did Judy Miller spend 85 days in jail? What was she protecting?
You know, I really believe that Judy Miller was protecting not her sources, not standing up for any sort of you know, journalistic principle, but I really believe that she was protecting you know, some of these people in the White House Iraq group and you know, the office of the vice president. And the reason I say that is because her when you look back on her stories, they were so, not only were they so wrong, but they were so you know, carrying the administration's you know, they were like press releases. It's as if she were, you know, part of the group in a sense.
In my view, she acted like an investor.
Yeah.
Who owned a piece of the action.
Right. It would sort of be like, you know, if she were, you know, covering a Fortune 500 company who, you know, had some sort of inside deal, you know, that telling everyone to buy this stock is the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that, you know, that I can think of, simply because of how, you know, let's face it, her politics, her personal politics, we know what it is. It came out, you know, during the course of her reporting on Iraq, and she was very much, you know, she was very passionate about this, and she, you know, found herself to be an expert on this, and thought that, you know, this is something, this war was something that needed to happen. So I just don't buy the whole journalistic principle. It just does not feel right. Perhaps there are other reasons, and perhaps I'm wrong, but it just does not seem real, not genuine. But, you know, going to jail for 85 days, wow.
Jason, the very last line of your article, which people can read at truthout.org, is, in the interest of fairness, any individual named in this story who believes he has been portrayed unfairly will have the opportunity to use this space to respond.
Yeah.
Now, I have two theories. One is that Fox News attorneys insisted that you include that line. And the other is, you're hoping some of these mofos will return your phone calls.
Yeah. I have to, you know, give credit to my editor there who suggested we put that in. And, you know, also I should say that the inspiration comes from the, you know, the movie Good Night and Good Luck,
mm-hmm.
Edward R. Murrow. You know, the thing is that this is an article, this is a story, this investigative story where there are, you know, relying on unnamed sources. And at the same time, you know, these are explosive allegations that, you know, that I'm making. You know, against at the highest level of government.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
well, Cheney calls you back, share it with us.
Oh, you can be assured that you know, you'll be one of my first phone calls. I mean, you know, if they want to have the opportunity to respond, I welcome it, and so does Truth Out. I mean, that's, we do want them to do that, and if they say this entire thing is wrong, well, let them say that. We want, mm-hmm. you know, we want to have a balance there.
We've got Dave on the line joining us from Humboldt. Hello, Dave. You're on with Jason Leopold.
Hey, Jason. I put this together in a way that has to be only speculative, but I do believe that Cheney was very angry with Joe Wilson for what he was doing. And I think when they exposed Valerie Plame, they fully expected she was going to get killed. That's what tends to happen to the undercover spies when they get outed. I think that was their plan. Just speculation.
I know a lot of people have, a lot of different theories, and I listen to all of them. You know, I'm not quite sure how far I'm willing to go in terms of, what their intention, what they were hoping. My personal opinion is, I think that Cheney believed that this, anyone who goes against the administration needs to be shut down. I think that they've demonstrated that for all their years in, politics and in Washington. I really wouldn't know how to comment on that, but.
Well, we were talking earlier in the program about the disdain for nuclear non-proliferation treaties and efforts that this administration has had, most recently evidenced by the New Deal with India.
Right.
And Brewster Jennings, the cover company that Valerie Plame was assigned to, that group, as far as I understand, was focused on nuclear non-proliferation, particularly Iran.
Right.
And so it's somewhat consistent in their arrogance and conceit that they would review this or consider this to be a kind of frou-frou effort over at the agency, and therefore not much would be lost by using it as payback to smear Wilson. And it's essentially kind of a brushback play to send a message to others who might want to do what Wilson did.
Absolutely. Listen, I'm willing to keep an open mind, and there is, nothing at this point that, I would say absolutely no way that could happen or that's what they were thinking. I think that this, that this administration is capable of anything at this point, and anything that it has done. I mean, when I saw the Katrina tape last week, I just couldn't believe it. How much more evidence do we need, to convince people that, this is the worst presidential administration in history.
And Jason, ABC News reported the two clips, one where Bush was told the levees might breach, and the other 3 days later where he said nobody expected the levees to breach. And it's not a lie, it's an apparent contradiction.
Right.
So try to get that nomenclature right. You may need that in the future. Dave, thank you for your call today.
Thank you.
Jason, just a couple of minutes before our next break, and I wanted to squeeze in one thing here because you provided deep coverage of the California energy crisis a few years back.
Right.
And I just want to take 1 minute here to float my theory about it and get your reaction.
Sure.
To me, it all came down to Diablo Canyon, that the cost overruns that PG&E incurred there, they tried four different ways to foist off on the ratepayers. First, they tried to foist it on the ratepayers, and the PUC said no. Then they tried to do it again, and the courts said no.
Right.
Then they went to Governor Wilson and cried on his shoulder, and he helped them develop the concept of deregulation, particularly permitting big corporate users to buy their power separately and wheel it in off the grid from other states.
Absolutely.
Which undermined the consumer ratepayer base here in California. So then in 1998, greased by PG&E, the legislation written by its lobbyists in large part, passed almost unanimously, kind of like the Patriot Act, without being read in Sacramento by either house of the legislature. And they just thought this was going to be a wonderful thing. And then the chickens came home to roost. And ultimately, PG&E used the bankruptcy process to achieve what it had been unable to do through the other routes that I talked about a moment ago.
Without a doubt.
They got the money back for the overruns at Diablo Canyon on the backs of ratepayers, not from shareholders.
Exactly. Absolutely. PG&E used the bankruptcy process. I have to say it this way. It was a genius business tactic that they did. This was just genius. It was, they were very much responsible. So was Southern California Edison for, the flawed deregulation legislation, because their lobbyists helped write it. They pushed it. I think you're absolutely right. I think PG&E, you know, is culpable. And unfortunately, you know, ratepayers, especially ones in San Francisco, are just, for the next 30 years, will be, you know, paying the highest price for electricity and natural gas in the country.
Jason, has anybody ever offered to pay off your stranded costs? You remember that phrase?
Oh, stranded costs, yeah.
PG&E had stranded costs, and it just made me feel so sorry for them.
Right.
I have stranded costs on a number of major credit cards if anybody'd like to make a contribution.
Same here. You know, the stranded costs were something that were artificially, the rates were frozen at an artificially high level. So they were already taking in hundreds of millions of dollars in profit. You know, because people, the idea was is that in 5 years down the road, when, you know, when these so-called stranded costs were paid off, it would, you know, everything would go down, the price, that is, of electricity, and it would even out. The bankruptcy process has been incredibly lucrative for PG&E. If anyone wants to take a look at their stock, the symbol is PCG. And I'll tell you, this is quite an investment right now. I mean, it's probably hovering around 30, I believe. But, you know, they just are raking in the money. And
one more question on this before we have to go to the break. Ballpark math. Great Avis had $6 billion in a surplus before the so-called crisis hit.
Right.
And by my count, we ended up with about a $35 billion deficit. How much of our taxpayer money was just sucked up by these energy producers, never to be recovered? There's been about $7 billion pledged to be repaid to California, but that doesn't nearly cover the cost that that was incurred during the dark period of the Davis administration.
There's a few things. One, there's the number that's out there right now is about $65-70 billion that, you know, that went out more than what we should have paid. And we're continuing to pay this off right now. So there's, you know, I don't have an exact figure, but put it this way: the long-term contracts that Davis had negotiated, these, you know, which were worth, I believe, about $50 billion.
Right.
We're going to be paying those off for the next 20 years. We have gotten some sort of relief in some of those contracts. So let's say they're down to $40 billion.
Wow.
We're gonna be paying those off, you know, for a long time to come.
And the robber barons suffered from faint hearts. We'll continue in just a moment with Jason Leopold, and we're going to talk about his powerful new book called News Junkie. That's coming up next here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
Do you care about labor issues?
Does it matter to you that we're losing thousands of jobs a year in this country to NAFTA and CAFTA?
Should all working men and women have health coverage?
Do you care about local labor struggles where workers are being exploited?
Do you want to unionize?
If you care, then join us. I'm Jose Mendez.
And I'm Ren Bradley.
Every Sunday starting March 5th from 1 to 2 p.m. for our new show,
Labor Matters,
as we discuss these important issues.
There are radio talk shows about sports, politics, money, sex, and religion. Now there's a talk show for parents and everyone else who cares for and about children. It's Childhood Matters, every Sunday from 9 to 10 a.m. here on KRXA 540. I'm the host, Rona Renner, the mother of four, a new grandmother, a nurse, and parent educator. Listen and call in Childhood Matters every Sunday from 9 to 10 here on KRXA 540.
Oh, KRXA traffic time. That was my cue. It's 4:49, and here's Metro Diane.
Well, we have an injury accident in San Juan Bautista. It's Highway 156 and 101. Motorcycle actually involved in this, so the roadway is temporarily shut down there for the landing of a medical helicopter. So it's Highway 156 at 101 in San Juan Bautista. Also an accident reported in Santa Cruz, northbound 1 at Emmeline Avenue. Still a vehicle involved in that one. It has been moved over to the shoulder. Also a two-vehicle accident in SoCal, 41st Avenue at SoCal Drive. Two vehicles are just exchanging information in a nearby parking lot for that one. This report is brought to you by Preparation H. Preparation H cream relieves burning, itching, and also gives you maximum strength pain relief on contact. It's the most complete Preparation H relief ever. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
It's 4:49 now as the Peter B. Collins Show continues. We're talking with investigative reporter Jason Leopold, and his new memoir is called News Junkie. Jason, I just have to tell you, I'm having a little trouble with your book. Oh. It's hard to put down.
I'm just
about halfway through it right now, and it has been cutting into my study time, you know, on the issues of the day and the news of the moment.
Well, but I apologize, and I thank you at the same time.
Well, it's a powerful read, and you really do bare your soul about aspects of your past.
Yeah.
And you were kind of a super fly white guy.
Yeah, and you know, let me say, it was incredibly difficult to write. It was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. And but it's something that it's a story that needs to be told. And, you know, the one thing I could say is that, you know, it's the truth, and the truth is ugly.
Mm-hmm.
I could not make the truth pretty. As much as I wanted, you know, as I would have loved to have done that.
Yeah.
But it's ugly, and you know, obviously, you know, people are probably wondering what I'm referring to when I have a past. I guess you could say that I've got these skeletons in my closet. You know, I sort of don't want to give away the whole story, but I really, what I try to talk about is, you know, how my personal life informed my professional life. I've made mistakes. I'm recovering alcoholic and drug addict. I've, you know, been arrested in my youth.
Mm-hmm.
I also share, I have a conviction. I have a felony conviction.
Mm-hmm.
From when I was in my 20s. And,
yeah.
You know, what I felt was like, I felt like a fraud. I felt that here I am, you know, covering one of the biggest stories at the time, the California energy crisis and the Enron scandal, and I am writing about people who are
flawed.
And I felt like a hypocrite.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the time I was hiding this from everyone in my, you know, in my life. That
mm-hmm.
that includes employers, friends, you know, my wife, who has been, you know, the most incredible support system, and who I would like to say, you know, saved my life, is probably, you know, one of the very few people that knew this. So this is, here I am, like, in a way, purging my own feelings of guilt by really writing about the truth of these people and trying to pursue that and
mm-hmm.
feeling that is something that, you know, I needed to do. And it was, I feel that, you know, I'm going to continue to report and dig for the truth. And I felt that if I'm going to do that, I have to, you know, be truthful to myself, you know, be honest with myself about myself,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time really, you know, expose myself.
Yeah.
Now, so,
in the book, I'm just curious, for example, I don't imagine that Lenny and Bruno are their real names, but have you settled with them? These were guys who you were dealing cocaine for,
right.
and often you would use the product before you could actually sell it. And then they discovered the way that you were cashing in CDs
right.
to fund the money that you owed them for the
yeah.
coke that they had advanced you. And
well, you know,
as you left it in the book, you hit the road for California, and they were still looking for you.
Yeah. And what I wanted to demonstrate is that the extreme paranoia that I felt. I'm not sure, to be honest with you, to this day, if they were actually really, really trying to get me, or if they knew that they could manipulate me and scare the bejesus out of me.
Mm-hmm.
But I was incredibly paranoid, you know, and looking back, I still can't tell. I still don't know what the issue was. To answer your question, I've never settled anything. And I could tell you that for, you know, again, you know, one of the details that I, you know, as you're writing a book and after you read it, you start realizing, oh, I wish I put that in. Oh, I wish I put that in. But, you know, when I first got out here, I would look over my shoulder for a good 3 years
mm-hmm.
because of how frightened I was.
Yeah.
Well, no.
I just have to say, and I don't want to give away a lot of the details of the book, but I really commend you. It doesn't read like a rehab journal. It comes across as an electrifying insight into the experiences that you had. And one thing that I will share here that I found really powerful was you open the book with a sequence after you've cleaned up, as you are working through some of the BS with Gray Davis's press secretary, Steve Maviglio.
Right.
And at one point, you thought you had been snookered and falsely reported some information, and then you came up with the corroboration, and it turns out they were spinning you.
Exactly.
In a rather evil way. And what you describe is the satisfaction of breaking a big story was as powerful and as satisfying to you as the first hit of cocaine that you snorted, whenever that was.
Yeah. There's no feeling like breaking a news story. I mean, that's exactly how I wrote it in the book. And, you know, I really try to give a behind-the-scenes look at the world of, you know, mainstream journalism and what it's like, you know, covering some of these stories and what it's like for a news junkie, you know, a person like me to, you know, there's a big ego boost when you break a big story. And at the time that I was doing this, it was, you know, the only feeling that I could recall, you know, after having been, you know, cleaned up and sober for a while was when I was, you know, still using,
mm-hmm.
When I would break these stories. And, you know, this is a cutthroat business, you know, and I really wanted to, you know, show that, you know, things aren't done always by the book. And as a journalist, I also say, you know, you have to decide how far you're willing to go to get the story.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well,
yeah.
Jason, as you know, I haven't finished the book, but in reading it, it deepens my respect for you. I'm the kind of person who I may have a smaller closet, but we've all got skeletons. We've all got a closet.
Wow, Peter, that I can tell you, you know, that means so much to me, and I truly appreciate.
Well, I can imagine,
that.
Though, that there are others who don't have the same reaction, and you have to deal with that.
Yeah, yeah, and that's and I, you know, I'm not going to lie. That's difficult. That's really hard, you know, because it really cuts into, you know, obviously, you know, brings back the, you know, insecurities. But
mm-hmm. you've probably heard there's a bad radio commercial. People do judge you by the words you use.
Yeah.
And when you write words that are so self-revealing, people will judge you.
Sure. And I absolutely expect that to happen. It's I don't think I'll ever be, like, prepared for it, but I expect it.
Mm-hmm. And haven't met you or Lisa, but Lisa sounds like a real powerful person who's done a lot for you, and you seem to be appropriately grateful.
Yes. It's been an incredible journey, and, you know, I'm happy, you know, thrilled to say that, yeah, we're together 9 years, you know, mm-hmm. and this has been, you know, a major ups and downs. I mean, yeah. Issues that probably, you know, no married couple goes through. But
Jason Leopold, thank you for joining us. The book is called News Junkie. I invite you to read it, see if you can put it down. And we'll talk to Jason again next week about this time. Thanks, Jason.
Peter.
If you own a Volvo and you want quality repairs and great service at a fair price, then take your Volvo to Hunt's Auto Repair in Seaside. They only work on Volvos, and they can do any needed service and repair, including all factory-recommended maintenance. Owner Mike Brooks is a Volvo-certified and factory-trained technician with over 16 years' experience. Mike's partner Tracy is also a factory-trained Volvo service advisor. Many Volvo owners in the area already know and trust Tracy to take care of their Volvos.
Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside, is a locally owned and family-operated full-service Volvo repair shop, where Mike and I feature honest, quality service at a fair price.
Bring your Volvo to us, and we'll do everything possible to ensure that you leave satisfied and fully informed about your Volvo. Remember, that's Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside. For more info, give us a call at 583-9820.
That's 583-9820.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. The House passes the Compromise Patriot Act, and the White House says President Bush is looking forward to signing it.
After 2 months of Senate filibusters, White House threats, and fights between the House and Senate, this is the final vote, and the Patriot Act renewal now goes to President Bush for his signature. It makes 14 of the 16 most controversial parts of the act permanent law, renewing for 4 years the most contentious provisions, allowing roving wiretaps and secret searches of business records, including those of hospitals, hotels, and libraries.
CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss. A new House subcommittee formed to oversee the NSA's anti-terror wiretap program is expected to get its first briefing tomorrow. The White House and House Intelligence agreed on the process today. A new book called The Game of Shadows may have put Barry Bonds' reputation into the shredder for good. A San Francisco Chronicle investigator Lance Williams is one of the authors.
Government documents, interviews, grand jury transcripts, a lot of these documents were sealed for a long time, but if you go to the courthouse now, for instance, you can read the confession of Victor Conti, the head man at Balco, and see what he said about providing banned drugs to Bonds.
CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman in Arizona for the Giants preseason game today.
Barry Bonds did not travel with the team here for its game against the San Diego Padres, but that had nothing to do with the article. Bonds has yet to play a game this preseason and is not traveling to games which are being played away from the Giants' spring training stadium in Scottsdale. Before the game, though, Bonds said he doesn't plan to read the article.
The article is in Sports Illustrated with excerpts from the book, no comment from the team. The trial of Kenneth Lay and Jeffrey Skilling in the Enron collapse got really interesting today with the testimony of former CFO Andrew Fastow, who told the court he cooked the books and Skilling knew it.
Fastow is the architect of the really intense crimes that occurred at Enron, and to the extent that he's willing to link Lay and Skilling to that, to tell jurors that they knew of what he was doing and they approved of it, he's essentially bringing them into that conspiracy.
CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen. At least 8,000 members of the U.S. military have reportedly deserted during the Iraq War. Todd Ensign is head of Citizen Soldier, an anti-war group.
If the war continues, and it certainly appears to be continuing, that this rate will increase, and that hopefully the support for soldiers will increase, and there will be more people refusing to go.
The Pentagon has a very long memory. It is still prosecuting deserters from the Vietnam War 30 years later, whenever they find them. He was America's first major black movie director. Shaft, just one of many films directed by Gordon Parks. He was also a fiction writer, an accomplished composer, and a photographer for Life magazine. Gordon Parks has died. He was 93. On Wall Street, the Dow gained 22 points to close at more than 10,980. The Nasdaq lost 17 points. This is CBS News.
Get the good stuff.
Hey, this is Michael Waltrip, driver the number 55 Napa race car. A lot of people don't know this about me, but I'm quite a hat collector. That's why Napa is helping me collect as many hats as I can, starting with yours. Just bring any old hat into your local Napa Auto Parts store and swap it for a brand new Napa racing hat. The same hat me and my race team wear at the track. Bring in your old hat today and drive home looking like a winner. Napa. Get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff!
Tiger Balm presents Jerry Rice.
Starting at wide receiver.
I'm ready for some football.
All-time record holder and Tiger Balm's biggest fan.
Huh?
Especially Tiger Balm's new pain-relieving patch.
The patch works for me.
Just apply the advanced hydrogel patch and Tiger Balm goes deep. Deep into aching muscles and joints. Tiger Balm's been around almost as long as...
Hey, watch it, pal.
Number 80, Jerry Rice.
Take a tip from me. Go for the Balm, Tiger Balm, and put the Tiger in your team.
Available at drugstores everywhere.
Some of you may have wondered where the government keeps top secret documents for cases against Saddam Hussein, Chemical Ali, and others.
The paperwork currently being held in Colorado could be used to implicate Saddam Hussein in his next trial here. The regime crimes liaison with the U.S. Embassy says millions and millions of former Iraqi regime documents are being held right now in the Denver area, and they could be used against the former dictator. An embassy official here says they're known simply as the Colorado documents.
And CBS News reporter Stephen Tubbs. The fog and stress of war, of having bullets and rockets fired at you regularly and having to dodge bombs, changes a person. And so a court in Italy has reduced the sentence of a U.S. soldier for raping a Nigerian woman there, saying making war in Iraq against an invisible enemy had made him less sensitive to the suffering of others. And so war got some of the blame. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic weekend getaway? Well, how about 3 days and two nights in Las Vegas at a major strip resort? And what about you don't pay a dime for it? That's right. Act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas's newest five-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge. Stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on Earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on, you know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. So stop what you're doing and call this special toll-free number, 866-71-LUCKY. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 866-71-LUCKY for all the exciting details. That's 866-71-LUCKY. Call now.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 5:06 on this Tuesday evening. And we're going to head into the free speech zone momentarily. My lines are open for you on the Central Coast at 831-899-5792. North Coast or elsewhere, call me toll-free, 888-579-2540. We'll be taking your calls about 10 minutes from now in the free speech zone. And every week, we invite a visit from Melanie Sloan. She's the Executive Director of CRU, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Hello, Melanie. How are you today?
Good, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm a little bit PO'd about a few things, like the Senate Intelligence Committee, and also the efforts to try to, develop some sort of a Citizens Ethics Commission in Washington. And last
right.
week, this was rebuffed on Thursday in a vote coming out of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs. 11-5, they defeated a bipartisan proposal from Lieberman and Collins, senators from Connecticut and Maine, respectively, Democrat and Republican, respectively, that would have created an Office of Public Integrity. And I think that this is an idea whose time, came about 3 or 4 years ago. And this reaction from the Senate reminds me of a group that was founded in San Francisco in the 70s by Margot St. James. And she was an advocate for prostitutes. She was a retired prostitute herself. And she named her group Coyote for Call Off Your Old Tired Ethics. And it seems like the Senate committee basically embraced Coyote in that vote.
It's true, and that is being offered again as an amendment probably tomorrow on the Senate floor, and it is expected to lose the effort to put the Inspector General's office back. It is particularly ironic when you consider that George Voinovich, I think I mentioned this to you last week, was complaining about the problem of the lack of an ethics enforcement, George Voinovich being the chairman of the Senate Ethics Committee and the one who has more power than anybody in the Senate to actually call hearings and do something about Senate ethics. But he's one of the people who has said particularly that they don't need this inspector general because the ethics committee is already doing a thorough job enforcing the chamber's rules.
And, of course, we can cite the case of Bill Frist, which has been fully investigated and brought to a resolution.
There are so many. We can talk about Richard Shelby, who is actually a senator from Alabama, who was referred to the Senate Ethics Committee, not by some public interest group, but by the Department of Justice for leaking classified information, and the Senate Ethics Committee refused to investigate Shelby, too.
Oh, boy. And as we have discussed on too many occasions, both the House and Senate Ethics Committees are essentially moribund at this time. They have an office, they've got a budget, they've got a staff, but they're doing absolutely nothing.
That's right. They do, yes, absolutely nothing is exactly how I'd phrase it. And this is particularly troubling in light of the fact that the Constitution actually says that the Ethics Committee, that the House and Senate are to police themselves. Article 1, Section 5, if anyone's listening and wants to check, says that members are to police the conduct of their own members.
Mm-hmm. Now, Common Cause and a few other good government groups called for an independent ethics commission. Do you support that idea, or do you prefer the inspector general approach?
Well, you know, I like any approach that takes it out of the Senate Ethics and House Ethics Committees themselves. Anything that takes it away from the members who will just never are never going to investigate their colleagues. And either the commission, which was originally offered by Senator Barack Obama, or the inspector general, which is the Lieberman-Collins position. Mm-hmm. You know, I would think either one would be great, but I have to tell you, neither one's going anywhere.
Yeah. And who will take the bill to the floor, and what do you expect to occur there?
I expect Lieberman or Collins to offer the amendment, perhaps jointly, to add the inspector general back to the bill, and I expect it to lose in a big way. And sadly, I don't expect a lot of Democrats to be voting for it either. And you would think that somebody somewhere would recognize that there is a problem in the Senate Ethics Committee, that as there is in the House, that there just is no ethics enforcement, and all the new rules they're talking about, all these new lobbying reform proposals, are meaningless if they're not going to put any teeth in them.
Yeah.
Now, also should tell you, though, that the fact that this bill is going through the Senate, not that meaningful, given that no legislation whatsoever is going through the House, and that's what House Majority Leader John Boehner wants, no reform at all.
So I'm a little confused just on the procedures here. The Senate could pass the Collins-Lieberman proposal or something similar, and it wouldn't have to go through the House, right? Because it's a rule change in the Senate, and each House respectively controls its own ethics process. Is that correct? Or
It depends on, yes, they control their own ethics process, and there are some things that they can control, but some of them, for example, are changing criminal penalties regarding lobbyists. And so if you're going to change the penalties for disclosure for lobbyist rules, then that's going to have to pass through both houses.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Melanie Sloan with us from Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Get more at their website, citizensforethics.org, citizensforethics.org. Now, you sent along to me in an email an interesting article from the Philadelphia Daily News that brings Senator Rick Santorum and his ethics back into the spotlight. We haven't talked about him since last week.
That's right. And if you remember, Peter, I promised you last week that there would be more to talk about this week on Rick Santorum.
Yeah.
This week, it's his charity. Rick Santorum, much like Tom DeLay, former Majority Leader of the House and someone we talk about frequently, has his own charity that allegedly does good works. And Mr. Santorum's charity has spent only about 40% of its money on charitable works, which is a problem in and of itself. And there's also a problem that some of the people who work for the charity also work for his campaign committee. But the big issue is that something called Preferred Real Estate Incorporated, which is developing a wharf in Chester, Pennsylvania, wrote a check for $25,000 to Rick Santorum's foundation. At the same time that Rick Santorum was working to get them $8.5 million in federal aid. So it appears that the $25,000 was, in fact, payment for the $8.5 million earmark, which is a pretty good return on your investment. Nobody ever said lobbying didn't pay.
Well, but when you put the money into Operation Good Neighbor Foundation, wouldn't you expect the good Lord to bless you in ways that you couldn't predict?
Well, I guess that's, you know, exactly right. And this is, you know, a problem that we're just seeing more and more. Lawmakers have charities, and what happens is that it's folks who have legislative interests who are the big contributors to those charities. So it's another way to sort of line the pockets of members of Congress. And that's why one of the things that I do think we need in reform now is to require transparency in the donations made to charities run by lawmakers.
Mm-hmm. And just for our people who pay a little attention to the details, the type of charitable entity, is it a 501c3 or a 527?
It's a 501c3. A 527 is generally about political activity, and these are 501c3s, which are purely charitable organizations that are supposed to be doing just good works. And, you know, nobody thinks that that's a bad idea, but it's, a you know, really a problem when it starts being the case that the reason people are giving it money is because they want something from a senator or a member of Congress. Former representative, former majority leader DeLay's wife, Christine DeLay, actually said that she was really sorry to lose the majority leader seat because it meant they got less money to the foundation. Well, that just shows you that's why they were getting money, was for legislative assistance, and that's not right.
And does Santorum have any apology, or is he red in the face in any way?
No, not red in the face. You know, he's explained that spending 37% of the total of money on fundraising expenses is normal, even though his fundraiser has received nearly $200,000 in fundraising fees from the operation, and she's also a fundraiser for his campaign. He doesn't seem to be suffering any embarrassment about that, but if there's one thing Rick Santorum doesn't seem to have, it's a sense of shame.
Yeah. Melanie, before you go, I wanted to ask you about Friday's sentencing of Duke Cunningham, the former Republican congressman, drew an 8-year, 4-month sentence in the federal pen. And, of course, many of us are curious. This was based on his guilty plea of being bribed, some $2.2 million in total. And the two individuals who appeared to be instrumental in his conviction were a guy named Wilkes, Brent Wilkes, a Poway defense contractor and a lifelong friend of the Dukester, as well as Mitchell Wade, who we've discussed on this program before. And my question is, at this point, do we have any idea who else, what other members of the House may be named by either Wade or Wilkes in conjunction with the investigation into these bribes?
Well, we don't know for certain, but I will say that people who are sort of under the microscope right now regarding this would be Jerry Lewis from California, Duncan Hunter from California, and John Doolittle from California.
Mm-hmm.
So a bunch of California members all under the microscope about this. Duncan Hunter seems to me the one most likely to have some problems here because he was on the same committee as Duke Cunningham, and he would have been helping those same folks get appropriations.
And Doolittle is staring down a double-barreled situation here because he is linked to Brent Wilkes' company called Perfect Wave, and of course he figures prominently in the Abramoff investigation as well.
That's right, and I feel confident that at least John Doolittle must be under the eye of some federal investigators. You know, whether anything will come of it is another matter, but I feel certain that somebody's at least taking a close look.
Melanie Sloan, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
We'll talk to you again next week from Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Coming up next, it's the Free Speech Zone. Your calls and comments are welcome. Any subject, any viewpoint from anywhere within the sound of my voice. Get on the line right now. Central Coast, a local call at 831-899-5792. North Coast or anywhere else, call me toll free at 1-888-579-2540. Again, that's 888-579-2540. We'll continue in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's tax time again, and there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay Area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund and, through electronic filing, get you that refund as soon as you need it, in 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks. The choice is yours. The personnel of Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get secure tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to bring a copy of your 2004 federal and California returns, W-2 1099 info for 2005. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville.
Is what you're doing in the market working for you? Are you happy with the results? Are you making money? Sundays at 2 p.m., KRXA is proud to present a new show entitled Safe Money and Retirement Talk, hosted by R.J. Moyer of About College Funding and the Protect My Assets Radio Network. RJ will present the latest information necessary to help you protect your money and ensure a comfortable retirement. Join RJ Moyer every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. for Safe Money and Retirement Talk, right here on KRXA 540.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
Alarm, so I wouldn't forget this time. It's 520. We're going to check traffic here on KRXA 540, and here's Metro Diane.
We have a new accident coming through for Gilroy's. Buena Vista Avenue at Marcella Avenue, CHP en route to check out how many vehicles involved and if it's blocking any lanes there. Also, some good news for San Juan Batista Highway 156 at 101. An earlier accident involving a motorcycle has been cleared, so medical helicopters left the scene. The roadway has been reopened, but be aware traffic may still be kind of heavy in the area there. Also, SoCal 41st Avenue at SoCal Drive, two-vehicle accident, drivers just exchanging information in a nearby parking lot. Checking the Santa Cruz Mountains, both directions of Highway 17, no new stalls or accidents report for that. This report is brought to you by Centrum Silver. Centrum Silver Multivitamins has essential nutrients, which emerging science suggests, along with a healthy diet, may help support heart health. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
You've got the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm glad you're listening. Now, I've declared you vice president for marketing in your zip code. Please spread the word. Line up new listeners for us. We want to be number one without a paper trail. We're in the free speech zone for the rest of this hour. Your calls and comments are welcome on any subject from any point of view from anywhere you happen to be. On the Central Coast, dial us up at 831-899-5792. That's 831-899-KRXA. And from the North Coast, or if you're listening online, anywhere else in the continental United States, it's toll-free at 888-579-2540. 888-579-2540. And we've got some callers on the line. We'll get to you here promptly. But I just wanted to recap for people who don't get to listen to the first hour of our program that we kicked off the show today with Glenn Greenwald, who is a lawyer and a blogger, and who has helped draw attention to a story that has been virtually blacked out by the mainstream media. And that is that late last Friday, about 5:30 in the afternoon, the Republican leader of the Senate, Bill Frist, who should have been bounced for his ethics problems last year, the insider trading issues, pardon me, he issued a letter to the Democratic leader, Harry Reid. And in it, he threatened to nuke the Intelligence Committee's structure. And I use that term because the nuclear option has been rumored for a long time, where the Republican majority would kill the filibuster by imposing majority rule over the minority. And that, of course, flies in the face of standing traditions in the Senate, as does the threat to change the composition of the Intelligence Committee, which has been structured in a bipartisan way, far different from the other committees of the Senate. And as I read you these key words, I'd like you to focus on the fact that the Republicans are using a mirror technique. They blame the Democrats for behavior that is theirs, for a description of behavior that reflects what they are up to. Got it? So he opens the letter, "I'm increasingly concerned that the Senate Intelligence Committee is unable to carry out its critically important oversight and threat assessment responsibilities due to stifling partisanship that is exhibited through repeated calls by Democrats on the committee to conduct politically motivated investigations." Now, this is 100% Bass backwards. Because the stifling partisanship is coming from the White House, and the Republicans on this committee are doing the White House's bidding to try to stop two investigations. One into the NSA wiretapping program, flatly illegal, and we know it. And the other into the pre-war intelligence, which the Intelligence Committee has only investigated up to a point, and they want to call that the end point. But they have been charged with identifying the extent to which the Bush administration hyped or misled the American people based on misuse of intelligence. That is an appropriate function of this committee, and Bill Frist's argument turns it on its ear. In a few minutes, our producer Matt Renner is going to join us with an update on the sordid actions of the Senate Intelligence Committee today. But first to your calls, Jake in Arcata, you're up. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, Peter, how's it going?
I'm doing okay, but I'm a little bit hacked off about this.
Yeah, I can understand why, definitely.
Jamming us again, and, you know, we have unprincipled Republicans and weak-kneed Democrats, and we are all the losers in this process.
Yeah, you got to tell those Democrats out there, Peter, those conservative Democrats, those blue dogs, like our congressman up here, Mike Thompson, they need to stand up for the people. I mean, Bush has a 34% approval rating. Cheney has an 18% approval rating, lowest ever in any poll. Yeah, it's about time the Democrats stop being scared for a change. And going to this whole thing with the port issue, I mean, really, this is a turning point. I mean, you have the Republicans finally turning on the president. His own party is finally saying the president has lost his mind. I think Bush may be resigning sometime soon, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I think
tell,
he may
tell
be.
Tell me more. Tell me more,
well,
Jake.
My take on this thing is it's going to be a mirror image of what happened with Agnew and Nixon. You're going to see Cheney resigning sometime around the election, you know, maybe before, maybe after.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the Democrats finally get a spine and push forward impeachment hearings, I think Bush will resign before he's convicted in the Senate, because clearly that man is guilty.
Well, on that scenario, I would agree. The pivotal point, though, there is whether the Democrats can get their it together and win back the House this November. And at this point, I'm not very optimistic, Jake. It's what I want. I wish for it. I hope for it. But when I get realistic and look at the situation, I don't see that the Democrats are poised to achieve it.
Oh, you're right. You know, I learned my lesson as far as wishful thinking goes with the Kerry campaign. You know, if the Democrats don't find their backbone, you know, and get out there and tell it like it is. That's the thing. I think a lot of Democrats, these conservatives, don't get it. The American public will support you if you are honest, straightforward, and actually have a position. If you're a flip-flopper, if you don't know what you believe, they don't want you no matter who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, a lot of people, for instance, did not agree with a person like Ronald Reagan. They didn't agree with his policy positions. But he appeared to be straightforward, somebody who believed in something. Therefore, people out there believed in him. Problem with a candidate like a John Kerry is, you know, he didn't know what he believed from week to week.
Yeah.
I mean, we need somebody who actually knows what they believe and can communicate that to the public.
Now, this is a little painful for some of our listeners going way back 6 weeks ago to the Alito confirmation. But this just underscores the painfulness of wishful thinking. Thank you, Jake. Talk to you
soon.
Thank you. Enough of that. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. More of your calls coming up next right here.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinker Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos and the just renovated Thinker Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily from 10 to 7.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Our music of the moment, a classic from the Steve Miller Band with Norton Buffalo on the harmonica there. Yes, we are destined to be living in the USA in interesting times. On the program tomorrow, retired Congressman Leon Panetta, who also served in the Clinton administration as the director of the budget office and then chief of staff at the White House. He'll be joining us on the program in our first hour. We're also going to meet State Senator Joe Dunn, who is a candidate in the Democratic primary this June for state controller. And he championed the Enron investigation during the power problems here in California just a few years ago. So he'll be on with us tomorrow in the 4 o'clock segment. We're taking your calls here in the Free Speech Zone. Any subject, welcome from any point of view. 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast or toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. More of your calls in just a second, but I've asked our producer Matt Renner to step in and update us a little bit on what we have learned, and it's sketchy at the moment, about the actions of the Senate Intelligence Committee today. As a result of the letter from Bill Frist to Harry Reid, we understood that Frist was trying to force a vote in the committee today, and it appeared to be an attempt to block an investigation of the NSA spying issue. Matt, what do we know?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, the details are just coming out, but Rockefeller sat down for 2 hours to give a news conference about this because it's such a big deal to him, and basically what he said is that the committee is under the control of the White House. That's a direct quote, and it's an unprecedented bout of political pressure from the White House. So it sounds like this isn't just coming from Frist's letter. It sounds like the White House is actually deeply involved in the pressure here.
Well, and the language you just cited is pretty strong for Jay Rockefeller. I've been critical of him because I find him to be lacking aggressiveness, particularly on critical issues like this that matter not only to Democrats. This is not, as Bill Frist has suggested, a stifling partisan issue. Unless you're a Republican.
Right. And it is great to hear him finally coming out and being somewhat stronger about this, but it's disheartening because Olympia Snowe said last Friday that she was going to vote in favor of his resolution to do a full investigation of this, which would have swung the vote 8-7 in favor of the Democratic side.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out, though, that she wasn't being honest and decided to go against her word and voted with the Republicans.
Wow, that is disappointing, because Snow and Collins from Maine offer the greatest hope in the Republican Party, because they're mavericks. They have a strong base in Maine that rewards independence, and I'm really disappointed about that, because we deserve an investigation, and this reflects badly, as we discussed with Glenn Greenwald in our first hour today, on the Senate Intelligence Committee itself, because it is acquiescing to the brutal treatment of the White House around the whole NSA spying issue, because the law clearly states that any domestic spying not only requires the approval of the FISA court, but also it's required that both intelligence committees and all of the members of both intelligence committees, House and Senate, be briefed on these issues.
Right.
And the Bush administration clearly did not do that.
Well, here's the thing, is that instead of actually a full investigation, they've decided to set up one of their subcommittees for oversight that, you know, is basically increasing the number of people that are going to be briefed on this from just Snow, just from Rockefeller and I forget who the other one is.
Roberts.
Pat
Roberts.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Now there's going to be 7 people who are going to be briefed on it. So it's...
Now, and let's just recap this. We have the White House acknowledging that it has embarked on a program that is clearly in violation of the law, and we have the Intelligence Committee scurrying to create a way to make that okay.
Right. Right. And wow. It's another thing. I mean, it's very strange to me that the thing I can't figure out in this whole investigation, this whole issue, is what the White House has on these senators and is forcing them to cut off their own, testicles.
Say balls.
Because it's amazing that they, you know, Karl Rove just calls them up and threatens to blacklist them. And that's enough, you know, he's saying, I mean, as far as I know, all that means is they're not going to get their campaign cash and their quote-unquote political support from this White House that's one of the most unpopular in history.
Right, and trending downward.
It's amazing that this is still working. That's all. I'm kind of excited to watch it crumble, but this is a defeat, right?
Yeah, and we'll pay the price. Thank you, Matt.
Sure.
Let's go to Millie in Aptos on line 3. Millie, thanks for holding. You're next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Yo.
Yo.
Old Navy word. So, first issue is regarding Enron. Fasto is really spilling the beans today, big time.
Well, he's pointing the finger at Skilling, but what about Kenny Boy? Is he implicating Kenny?
I assumed he was hitting both of them.
Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer to that so far. I haven't caught up on that coverage.
He surely must. With the news report I heard, he targeted both of them. And you may know now I'm having a senior moment of the first guy, not fast out.
Skilling?
Skilling. No, the other one. Ken Lay,
right.
Ken Lay was a very close classmate in Midland, Texas, of Georgie.
Mm-hmm.
And Georgie has really protected him big time.
But he can't remember meeting him, can't remember knowing him, can't remember cashing all those checks.
Oh, they were big time pals.
Mm-hmm. All right, now I'm reading through. Hold on just a second. Hold on. I'm reading through an article here posted by the New York Times online. And it refers to Fastow's testimony. Under questioning, he said that Enron's board and two top executives discussed the questionable nature of the partnerships, but ultimately approved them. At one board meeting, a director raised questions, but nothing in here so far about Ken Lay.
Well, we'll just have to wait. But if he's not in there, it's because of his pal, Georgie Bush.
Well, but it's also possible that it'll come up later. I don't know that this is
sure
the only day
maybe
that
they're
Fastow
doing them one
testify.
At a time.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, regarding Barbara Boxer, my favorite person, she voted to extend the Patriot Act today.
Well, it wasn't today, but you're correct. She did vote for it. It was last week.
Well, okay.
The House is voting on it today. And Sam Farr, the Central Coast congressman, sent us a statement that he will vote against it.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Well, this is really demoralizing from my point of view with Boxer.
I don't understand it myself because I don't apologize on behalf of Dianne Feinstein, but I wouldn't expect her to vote against this. It's not in her blood. But I am shocked that Senator Boxer.
Everyone is shocked over Boxer.
Yeah.
Everyone. It is simply just too much.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't tell you how happy I am that we have a blood and guts type of guy, Congressman Murtha from Pennsylvania, I guess.
You're right.
Who has brought upon himself a lot of attacks because of his outspoken criticism of the way this war is conducted. However, he's still in there pitching. He's still in there telling the truth about how it's going. And if any war could be less conducted in a decent way, it's this one. And he's bringing it all out.
Yeah, I give him a lot of credit. And it's a great surprise to me. It's almost as surprising as Boxer voting for the Patriot Act to see Jack Murtha turn on the Pentagon the way he has.
Well, good for Murtha. Anyway, Billy, if you're out there, call me. Goodbye.
Okay, Billy, call Millie, and that's the party line message for this afternoon. We'll take more of your calls here in the Free Speech Zone after a quick break. Join me on the phone at 831-899-5792 or toll-free 888-579-2540. You prefer email? You can drop me a note, peter@krxa540.com. And that's the same website where we stream the program for people who are outside of our broadcast areas. You can log on to KRXA540.com and click on the Listen Live button, and it'll stream it into your computer wherever you happen to be. 5:43 now, this is the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hello, I'm Jose Mendez.
And I'm Ren Bradley. Please join us on our new show,
Labor Matters,
on Sunday starting March 5th from 1 to 2 p.m.
We'll be talking about issues of importance to the labor movement and raising awareness of the local struggles of the working men and women of our community.
And, as time permits, state and national issues. Don't give up the
fight. There are radio talk shows about sports, politics, money, sex, and religion. Now there's a talk show for parents and everyone else who cares for and about children. It's Childhood Matters, every Sunday from 9 to 10 a.m. here on KRXA 540. I'm the host, Rona Renner, the mother of four, a new grandmother, a nurse, and parent educator. Listen and call in Childhood Matters every Sunday from 9 to 10 here on KRXA 540.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
See if we have Diane now. Diane, go ahead, give us a little traffic.
All right, let's see. We only have one thing to tell you about. Most of our earlier accidents have cleared. Castroville, southbound 1 after Malero Road. Camper shell partially blocking the right-hand lane there, so definitely watch out for that. That's a pretty big item. Santa Cruz Mounts, both directions of Highway 17. Check and install and accident-free. So other than that, it's a pretty smooth commute so far.
This report brought to us by
Centrum Silver. Centrum Silver Multivitamins has essential nutrients, which emerging science suggests, along with a healthy diet, may help support heart health.
Thank you. It's 5:46 now. The free speech zone wide open for you on the Peter B. Collins Show. There's still room for another call or two. Central Coast, 831-899-5792. North Coast, toll free, 888-579-2540. And Ed from Aptos, you're up next here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Hi, Ed.
Greetings.
You got me earlier today. I got an email from you.
A little tongue-in-cheek.
Well, I didn't get it right away. You snookered me.
How's that?
Well, I thought it was a serious rollback of pension benefits, and then I read a little further, and it's the Flying to Die program or something like that.
Well, it's the answer to the problem in the airline industry and their pensions. You just fly till you die, and then they wheel your coffin out and put another geriatric in the seat.
Well, that's a novel way to cut the burden on American companies.
Well, actually, I think it came from Air Canada. It was talking from the point of Canadians. I think the same thing is happening to our brethren to the north.
And yep, news today that General Motors announced a freeze in its pension benefits, and they are going to be converting younger workers over to worthless 401k plans.
Well, I don't think that the 401ks will be particularly worthless, but it's just that you won't have the guarantee that, you know, you'll never know until it comes time to retirement, and even in retirement, you'll still probably be dependent upon the investment markets.
Well, it's not a defined benefit, and what happens with most 401ks, as we saw at Enron, is that people load up on the shares of the company they work for, and they're not diversified, and that's a very risky position, particularly when somebody does an Enron.
Yes. That's not what I called for.
All right, Ed. What did you want to talk about?
Well, two things. One, I think it was Jake that called from Eureka, and he was pissing and moaning about the Democrats. Well,
yeah.
I don't know if he's getting off his butt and working for the Democrats up there. If you want to change it, get into the party and start pissing and moaning about, from the party level, about Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer. You have a lot more voice if you're in the party apparatus, and it's very easy. He's got until the 10th of March to go down to his voter's office and take out his papers and be on the County Central Committee.
All right. I'll lay out that challenge to Jake, and next time we talk to him, we'll ask him if he's taking it up.
And secondly, I was thinking about, I saw the piece on 60 Minutes about Brian Schweitzer in
Montana.
Uh-huh. But he was saying, well, one thing that hit me was that there's Montana has a population of 950,000 people. That's only slightly more than the population of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And not just San Francisco proper, not the Bay Area.
You're right. The city is about 850.
And I haven't delved into it further to see. I think maybe Baucus is one of the Senate seats is up for a vote. I think Baucus is protecting a Democratic seat there in Montana. But a few people, if you want to take a little vacation, go up there prior to the election, and we can't donate much money, but we can donate our labor to the, and it does take some labor to run a campaign and to get out the vote and do all those grunt work things that need to be done in the elections.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought the 60 Minutes piece about Schweitzer was interesting in that he is a Democrat who got elected in a red state. I don't know all of his positions, but what they highlighted was his efforts to turn coal into a liquid diesel fuel that could be used, and he even has a novel plan to deal with the CO2 emissions from the processing of the coal, which is to pump it back into the underground coal shafts, which it's novel to me. I don't know if it all works out scientifically, but I do think that was a very interesting pitch that he gave for his alternative fuels program on 60 Minutes the other night.
Yeah, it's just a matter of economics. It does cost money to do that, so you have to sit down and take off your shoes and figure out, you know, where your break-even point is and whatnot. But when your back is against the wall, they mentioned in the piece that it's been done twice, once by Nazi Germany and then by South Africa when they were embargoed and didn't have any access to fuel, but they did have coal, and so they could use that process. So it's not it's not a new process, but it's just, you know, probably have to put a lot of energy back into it to get to your final product.
Yeah. No, I'm glad people are thinking outside the box, and if they're going to strip mine a state, I'd rather it be Montana than California.
Well, I think that they're stripped, you know, the way they were doing it. He showed the one where you kind of lay the stuff aside and do your strip mining, and then you fill it in with the overburden that you've taken off, and you've still got a viable piece of real estate there, and it looks, you know, it just takes a lot of money and whatnot to get to get it done.
All right, Ed, I like what I saw on TV.
Let's see
if they can make it happen. One more thing?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Go ahead.
It's along the same lines. Jack Carter is running to replace Ensign in Nevada. So that's even closer than Montana. So people can go combine a weekend fling in Nevada and end up doing a little bit of campaign work in Nevada and help out Jack Carter in his Jack Carter, who's the son of Jimmy Carter, ex-president mm-hmm. Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, that could be an interesting race. All right, Ed, thanks. Good to hear from you today. Now to Brian in Prunedale, who likes to hold my feet to the flames. Hello, Brian.
Hey, Peter, good day. Just heard one of your previous callers mention Mirtha, Representative Mirtha, so I Googled Mirtha on the Internet and came up with an interesting article about how he advised President Clinton that he should take all of the troops out of Somalia back when the Rangers were attacked in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
And President Clinton heeded that advice, and it prompted Osama bin Laden to become emboldened and plan even greater attacks as a result of the turning tail and running out of Somalia that President Clinton sanctioned.
There was a low point in American foreign policy. Who actually put U.S. troops in Somalia, Brian?
Who put them there?
Yeah.
I believe it was Bush that tried to put them there in the first place.
And it was the lame duck President Bush. He had lost the election in November of 92, and he committed U.S. troops to Somalia in December.
Yes.
I just wanted to point that out for balance.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. That he put them there, and they were kept there by Clinton, and they were under armored as well, which is they didn't get the up armor that they wanted either.
Mm-hmm.
Consequently, they suffered some casualties, and it was a low point. I agree with you, and I'm just saying that the advice that is being given to turn and run had literally foreshadowed the 9/11 World Trade Center attacks by Osama bin Laden. He was emboldened by that failure to stay and fight, and he felt that he could plan and larger and more glorious attacks.
Mm-hmm. Brian,
we are today.
I think you and I are for a moment here on the same page. So how do we apply this to Iraq?
I read an interesting article about the apprehension of Benedict Arnold during the Revolutionary War.
Mm-hmm.
Benedict Arnold was apprehended by George Washington's troops, and he was detained without a warrant. And he cried foul and said that they had no business holding him against his will without a warrant. And they said, screw the warrant, we're going to search you. In his shoe, they found a letter written to the British Empire, wherein he agreed to surrender all the information that he could get and in exchange for a plantation in Canada and a pension, a military pension from the British Army. That guy got executed as a traitor. He also suggested that the British Army should just be patient. The people in this country are growing tired of this conflict and will soon give it up. Any of that sound familiar to you?
Well, yes, but it doesn't inform our present situation because we put ourselves into this pickle, and Bush was oblivious to the warnings that he got from his father and Brent Scowcroft and a lot of people on the left that if you blow the lid off the Saddam dictatorship, you cannot keep these parties from tearing each other apart. And that's the dynamic we're facing now, Brian.
That is a tragic situation. They were doing that anyway, and they're going to do it tomorrow as well.
And you suggest that we should stay there and remain a target as they rip each other apart.
No, not necessarily. I wouldn't be a target. I'd be targeting troublemakers myself, and that's the strategy that I'm sure the Pentagon is trying to get implemented.
How many troops, if you were the commander-in-chief, how many troops would you deploy to secure Iraq?
Well, I don't know the numbers game, but Peter, you're a very smart man, and I'm not trying to match wits with you, but I'm just saying that I don't know what exactly the reasons for remaining there in the status that we are. I'm interested in how the thing turns out as well. It's got to come out good or we're all going
to
suffer.
My point is that to, quote-unquote, stay the course when we cannot possibly secure the country, when we are the irritant that unites these disparate groups, the only thing they agree on is that the U.S. has got to go.
You've been listening to Al-Qaeda's propaganda machine. We didn't blow up the mosque.
We don't know who blew up the mosque. We spent
lives and treasure to protect those mosques. That was an Al Qaeda attack on a Shiite
you
mosque.
You don't know that.
Oh, please. Did you hear what the Iranian president said? And you're going to believe him? Oh, come on.
No. All I'm saying is there is no proof that Al Qaeda was responsible for blowing up the Golden Mosque in Samarra. That's simply not true. It is not established.
I believe they've issued a claim of responsibility for it.
No, they haven't.
Well, let's just wait and see what happens. But if we wanted to blow up any more mosques, do you think anybody could stop us?
Well, I don't think that's the point. Thank you, Brian.
All right.
Steven Salinas, you're next. You've got a minute. Go ahead, Steve.
Okay, good afternoon. Thanks. On your guest you had in the first hour, it reminded me of an article that I saw Bill Moyers wrote, and it appeared in the Monterey County Weekly about a year ago, March 31st, April 6th. And Bush might be one of those folks that, expecting Armageddon, he wants it, apocalypse, so that Christ will return to the earth. And maybe that's why he's arming India and, you know, encouraging everybody else to get nuclear weapons to blow up the whole world. And so
have you been reading Tim LaHaye?
It might be.
All right, Steve, I'm out of time here. Thanks for your call.
Jake,
I want to ask you a quick question. You're ready to register for the Central Committee? Oh, Jake's not there. Oh, he is running for the Central Committee. Ed, he has heeded your advice. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate the calls. I'm glad you're listening. I'll be back at you tomorrow from 3 to 6 p.m. right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Happy trails to you.
Are you looking for money for college? Every year, billions of dollars in financial aid go unclaimed because parents just don't know how to properly access those funds. Mistakes are made in filling out applications. Deadlines are overlooked. And ultimately, it's the student who loses out on desperately needed funds. R.J. Moyer, president of AboutCollegeFunding.com, offers solutions to your financial aid dilemma.
If you're the parent of a college-bound high school junior or senior, critical deadlines are rapidly approaching, and we do specialize in late-stage college funding planning. Regardless of your income, assets, or home equity, I can help you send your child to the college of his or her choice without spending your life savings. But you must take action now.
AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. Call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Harley Carnes. The House vote was 280 to 138 for passage of the new version of the Patriot Act. Count Ohio Democrat Dennis Kucinich among the naysayers.
The administration is violating the laws Congress has passed and trampling on the Constitution of the United States. I will not give this administration any additional police powers.
Wisconsin Republican James Sensenbrenner.
The Justice Department and other agencies have properly used the Patriot Act to detect, disrupt, and dismantle cells in New York, Virginia, and Oregon before they struck.
The White House says President Bush looks forward to signing it before the old act expires on Friday. A new House subcommittee formed to keep an eye on the NSA's terror surveillance program may get its first briefing tomorrow. CBS News correspondent Gloria Borger.
First, the president must explain why he needs to eavesdrop to a newly created congressional subcommittee and renew approval for those secret wiretaps every 45 days. If at any time there is probable cause that a suspect is an agent of a foreign power, the attorney general must get a warrant from a secret intelligence court to continue.
Key committee members have been briefed all along. This new committee allows more members of both parties in on the sessions.
Clearly, I think his reputation is in shatters right now.
Sports Illustrated baseball writer Tom Verducci is talking about Barry Bonds and the excerpts in the magazine this week from the book that nukes Bonds' reputation for once and for all, perhaps, as a heavyweight among steroid abusers.
Drug by drug, day by day. Where his usage began, how it grew and more sophisticated over the years. That sort of level of detail we have not seen before.
The book, Game of Shadows, is by two San Francisco Chronicle investigative reporters. Andrew Fastow, Enron's former chief financial officer, told the court he cooked the books, and he told CEO Jeffrey Skilling about it.
Fastow, Enron's chief financial officer, invented a maze of off-the-books partnerships that made the energy giant look hundreds of millions of dollars richer than it really was. Skilling, he testified, called the deals the juice that kept the company going because they artificially inflated Enron's bottom line and made Fastow a rich man.
CBS News correspondent Lee Cowan in Houston. 2 months ago, she could still sing.